Like, let's say you're driving along the road with your family, and you're driving along, la la la, woo, and then all of a sudden there's a truck tire in the middle of the road, and you hit the brakes.
Whoa, that was close.
Now let's see what happens when you're driving with the other guy's brake pads. You're driving along. You know. You're yelling back seat. I gotta go to the bathroom, Daddy. Not now, damn it. Truck tire. I can't stop. Oh, help! There's a cliff. Oh, and your family's screaming, oh, my God, we're burning alive. No, I can't feel my legs. Here comes a meat wagon. And the medic gets out and says, oh, my God. New guy's in the corner puking his guts out. All because you want to save a couple extra pennies. And to me, it doesn't...
Get out. Now.
Do you validate?
Now.
Live from the 905 Geek Studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio, this is the Rick Emerson Show.
Yes, indeed it is. Why, hello, and thank you for coming by. It's 2 minutes and 38 seconds after the hour of 11 in this month of July, the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for joining us here. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson radio program. It is Tuesday, and welcome to day 12. It's 503-733-2970. You'd like to join us today. 503-733-2970 with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, or what have you. Scotty J is standing by, able, willing, and ready to pass along your observations about the groundbreaking, the interesting, the tedious, the mundane, the somewhere in between, your equivocations, your prevarications, your input of any kind. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com, Sarah at 970.am, Tim at 970.am, or Scotty J at 970.am. Speaking of Scotty J, he's given himself a new title. I saw that here. This, I have here a copy of Scotty's email to the people at MTV. He's just like a dog with a bone with the Scott Baio business, at which he will be unsuccessful, by the way. And I'm not trying to give him negative affirmations or whatever it is. I'm not trying to harsh his mellow or be defeatist about it. I'm just saying I can read the writing on the wall, and it's not going to happen. Doesn't matter. He just keeps... great thing about Scotty is he's sort of like the Roadrunner. No, not the Roadrunner. The coyote. You know where he paints the picture of the tunnel on the brick wall, and the Roadrunner goes through it?
And somebody drops an anvil on his head.
And then, now the Roadrunner goes right into the painting and goes down the road that's not there. And then the coyote backs up and tries to do it right into the wall. And then gets up and does it again over and over. That's Scotty. So we'll read this email from Scotty to the people at the MTV booking department here in just a few. All right. Aren't we part of MTV, or were we, or are we not anymore?
We were. The but company split in two.
That was...
Yeah, remember we had all of those fun MTV addresses?
Thunder Redstone split it in half.
So we are no longer part of Viacom.
Not really.
Not really. It's so hard to tell. Yeah, you're right, because if you looked at the company's global address book, which is, you know, like your CBS email account, there would be all of those. Like, you could email everybody. If you press the wrong button, you could inadvertently email the entire staff of VH1 Classic. I mean, really, you just, like, press the... you know, just press the wrong button once or twice. Every single person at MTV, we get an email from you. So, well, in any event. And then I'm still not sure. Now, see, I don't even know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. I don't understand that business with us and Paramount.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
There's that whole...
It says CBS Paramount on the slide that they show at the end of the country.
Now, what are you talking about?
Well, Paramount is owned by CBS.
See... Well, I'm treading on the dangerous ground here. Never mind. I'm walking out on the...
For your own information.
I'm walking on thin ice. I'll be quiet.
Not that it matters to anyone, really.
No, I'm going to stop now. It's 503-733-2970. It's just... never mind. 503-733-2970. We're now delving into an area of shop talk that nobody cares about. 503-733-2970, my friends, my compadres, my amigos, my whatnot. Here's what's coming up later on today. We'll talk to CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy from the Dirty South. He'll be talking about the... I wasn't going to talk about this O.J. Simpson thing because I do, because it's not Jim Roop today because he's gone this week. And really, O.J. is a thing that Roop and I can just talk about endlessly, because I find it to be a fascinating slice of American culture. Even now, Jesus, 12 years after the fact, 10 years, 11 years, something like 96, 95, whatever. Because to this day, I mean, really, I don't think you could find an event in the history of America that is more of a microcosm of every single problem this country faces than the O.J. trial. I mean, really, it is the definitive American legal case. I mean, it's never been surpassed. I don't think it ever will be. And especially Roop, who was in L.A. at the time, and blah, blah, blah. And so we can talk about that endlessly. It's not Roop, it's Ed McCarthy. The reason I'm talking about it today, and I wasn't even really going to talk about it until I heard Dennis Miller making this observation about it. I think the Goldman family today, or yesterday, won the rights to that O.J. Simpson, the If I Did It book, which now the Goldman family... This is a true story. It sounds like I'm making this up. So the Goldman family is going to retitle O.J.'s book, and they're going to call it, like, Confessions of a Double Murderer or Confessions of a Murderer or whatever, and then they're going to sell it, and then they'll make all the money from it, which then just begs the question, and I had never thought about this, but now I will, and now you will, too, because it's fascinating. So the question is Fred Goldman going to do a press tour for the book, or is he, I mean, I know that sounds morbid, but, I mean, I think that ship has already sailed. I think the morbidity of the O.J. case at this point cannot even be charted. Like, it can't even be graphed. There is no possible way. It's like just the gruesome and dark nature of the O.J. case now in 2007 is just so unbelievably unprecedented that there's just no way to even comprehend the scale of it. So the idea that O.J. Simpson wrote a book confessing to the murders that now is owned by Fred Goldman, who will then be selling it and then presumably profiting, I think it's 90% of the profits, off a book about the killing of his son, written by the guy who did it, who was then acquitted. I mean, it's just unreal. So anyway, so I want to know if Fred Goldman's doing a press tour, because I'll book that guy today. I don't even care. I don't even care what he's going to talk about. I'll book that today. Scotty, you might be able to secure that interview. Anyway, so we'll talk to Ed McCarthy about that later on. Let's see. Lisa Goddard is going to be joining us today. We'll talk. What's his name on the Supreme Court? He had a stroke or something, or a seizure.
He was foaming at the mouth after falling some 12 feet.
No one, I mean, you don't really think of people actually foaming at the mouth. That's a thing that they only do in old Vincent Price films. But apparently it happened yesterday. But they said he's fine. He's up and joking with the doctors. Let's see. What else do we have? Steve Kastenbaum will join us from New York City. We'll talk about Rupert Murdoch's goal to own everything that isn't owned by Google. We will have today the top five slow dance songs of the 90s. Because I'm just going to squeeze that as hard as I possibly can. And then tomorrow we'll do the top five slow dance songs of the 70s. And then on Thursday, we should just do it all the way back. We should just do it all the way back to the 50s and just finish out the entire week with that. You know, the top five slow dance songs of the 60s, top five slow dance songs of the flapper era. But today we'll do top five slow dance songs of the 90s as compiled by Sarah Dillon. What else? Corpse Watch coming up today. Religious Nutcase Watch. We will, I meant to do this yesterday, we didn't get a chance. We will continue and commence our search for the second worst story in the history of the world. And, well, that's it. Well, that's not it, but that's all. Those are all the things I'm going to tease right now. Let me just say this, by the way. I want to announce, and we did this via email, but I will announce on the air, the winner of our Give Tim Riley Cornrows contest. That contest was won by Eric, a guy named Eric. He did the bottommost photo. If you go to rickemerson.com, he did the photo at the very bottom. We narrowed it down to like four finalists. He did the photo at the very bottom where Tim looks just like the Predator. The Predator, but with like red and
green.
Oh,
that one was good.
I spent, the others were all great to him, and they were all wonderful.
That's exactly the way I looked at my dream, thanks to Sarah Dillon.
which is so great and disturbing. In the dream, was there a reason she was giving you cornrows?
No, there was not.
It was
I just simply accepted the fact.
Well, yeah. I mean, now you know what you have to go at for the next listener party. For Halloween, your costume has already been selected. Excellent. So congratulations, Eric. Ye win a T-shirt, I think. You know, can I just say this, though? Everybody we've tried to give a T-shirt to recently, I'll ask the size, and there's always multiple X's in front of that L. And I just don't know if we've got any of those. We have... There's a segment of our audience that is large, so they're people of size. So I'm not entirely sure that we have a like an XL or a 2X or whatever the hell it is. You may just get a Movement 107.5 shirt instead. We'll see. Let's see. Well, that's it. It's 503-733-2970. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Why, hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing well.
All right. Fantastic.
How are you?
I'm dandy. I'm dandy. I really am. I rode my bike. I had some coffee. Had a Vizo. I'm feeling great.
So I know. I went to get a Vizo. I saw one in there, and I was saving it. I'm like, ooh, I'll just... Hopefully nobody will drink it overnight. And I went in, and it's one of the non-caffeinated ones.
Yeah, no, there was a Will left, but I consumed that. I'm
you
sorry.
Bastard.
That was me. It was me. Well, and look, I'm not trying to knock on the vending machine guy, because he did finally give us a Vizo. He did finally stock the vending machine with Vizo. And I told him, I'm like, and I've been telling that guy for like 6 months, like, you put it in there, it'll sell. Because, you know, the vending machine, those guys keep very careful track of what sells and what doesn't. Because obviously, if it doesn't sell, he doesn't get, you know, he doesn't make any money. And I told him, I'm like, if you put this Vizo in, you know, people are going to buy it. And he was, you know, and he was sort of not skeptical, but I mean, I think he was cautious because it's a boutique beverage, as they say. It's sort of a smaller company still. You know, it's not like a Coke or a Pepsi. And I think he was, you know, he wanted to see if there was anecdotal evidence. So he put three rows of Vizo in, and I could have told him this. That if it doesn't have caffeine, nobody in a radio station is going to buy it. If it's decaffeinated, there's going to be no reason for anybody here to purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
So true to form, he put three rows of Vizo in there. One of them caffeinated, the other two not. The caffeinated one was gone in like a day. The others haven't even been touched. Not that the other flavors aren't great, but it's like, you know, when I leave
it. Oh, Tim likes the Raza.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, there's one in there.
Yeah, there's one in the fridge in here.
Oh.
Yeah, right here in the Vizo refrigerator in our studio.
Well, I might take it home with
me. It's right over there. Yeah, be sure to drink it before you get on the Max.
I know, that's true.
And then try to go over a lot of bumps and potholes on the way home.
There are plenty of bumps on the way home after you drink one of those.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. All right, so blah-da-da-blah, I got
blah,
nothing.
Blah-da-blah.
I don't know.
I'm kind of distracted today, because today's I'm going to have my first live read, and I'm really nervous.
Is that coming up today?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a music bed selected?
No. I was going to find something on the YouTube. I did have something selected, but I left it at home. I didn't think it was today. And I know it sounds totally retarded, but I have a fear of public speaking, so I'm a little nervous about that. That's why I'm distracted.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. It's going to be fantastic. Now,
yeah.
Now the best part is now that you've tipped your hand to it, now everybody will be listening hyper acutely.
I know.
Later, I figure,
you know what, I'd rather just have people know the truth and know that and let them know that I am a little nervous about it instead of just trying to pretend like I'm a professional.
No, that's the great thing about this program. Let's just call it what it is. The great thing about this program is we can pass off our own nervousness and incompetence as a style. We can pass off our own lack of
inadequacies.
Our own lack of polish as a personal trademark. It's like I have a friend of mine. He's a guitarist, and he has this great thing. He says, he's like, if you're playing guitar publicly, he's like, if you're ever performing live, he's like, if you make a mistake, make it twice more in the song, because like three times, then it's your style.
Uh-huh.
He's like, if you play something that just doesn't fit and makes no sense, he's like, wait till that part in the song comes around again and do it like twice more. And he's like, then people in the audience will think that it's a personal style. They'll think it's some sort of flourish that you're adding.
A quirk.
And even if it doesn't make any sense, like even if it sounds totally out of place, the audience will assume that they're not smart enough to understand why it's in the song. Like they'll figure it's some sort of jazzy kind of brushstroke that you've added to the composition. And they'll feel like, oh, listen to that weird dissonant chord he played that makes no sense. That's kind of a Segovia kind of touch. And they'll totally just accept it. So it doesn't matter. When is that coming up in today's program?
I don't know.
Is it going to be in
like
this hour?
No, probably not this hour. Probably in an hour or so.
Okay, so be listening for Sarah Dillon's first live commercial endorsement coming up later on. It's for a great place, though.
And, it is.
Because Aaron and I went there with you. So
yeah.
It's for a wonderful place. You'll have to find out who it is later on.
Oh, what a guarantee is there, Rick Emerson.
I just want to make sure everybody's listening. All right.
Thank you.
It's what I do. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your...
An Oregon reality show star is busted for DUI. Rasheed Wallace's $5.2 million Portland mansion is for sale, as is Paris Hilton's Hollywood home. Tacoma will play classical music at its bus stop to clear them of congregating gang members. The governor will probably veto a plan to save OMSI from its financial destruction. And although it wasn't said publicly yesterday, we are seeing this in print. But we don't have any sound bites to go along with it. Too bad. British Prime Minister Brown has made it clear to W that he will not delay his company's withdrawal from Iraq just to please the U.S.
In your face. Yeah.
No sound bites, no video available, but here's the statement.
Now, where is the statement? Is it from a reputable source?
It is, yes.
Or is it in one of Ed Anger's columns?
No, it's
so it's from an actual news story.
I have it somewhere in
here. Did we ever get clarification on that business of Paris Hilton being disinherited? Because, you know, it seems like it should have been a bigger story. And I just live with this gut-level fear that somehow it's going to turn out to not be true.
People are tired about hearing about her. So.
I know.
No, I read a bunch of things today saying that wasn't true.
It doesn't matter. We're not going to retract it.
We're going to continue to plunge on.
We offer no apologies.
No apologies.
There are bigger people making bigger messes than us.
No. It's true.
You're getting your apologies from Washington, from the insurance companies, from Big Oil. Why should we apologize?
Good point, Tim. Well done.
All right.
It's 503-733-2970. People commenting on our... And somebody actually asked the same question you did. They asked if that was Black Sheep today. And it's not. It was Tommy Boy at the top of the hour. And you can be forgiven
movies, though.
Well, and let's be honest. They're basically the same show.
I know. And did they come out, like, very close to each other?
Yeah. Well, because they figured out... Because, you know, the thing is... The weird thing about Chris Farley and David Spade is that I'm not going to say Chris Farley's not funny on his own because he sort of was. But, I mean, he was much funnier with David Spade. And David Spade, let's just call it what it is. Call a spade a spade. He was only funny with Chris Farley. David Spade has never been funny in anything else. I mean, I guess the Hollywood Minute sort of passed as sort of a snarky kind of comedy, I guess. But, I mean, there was no... He has no appreciable comedy value when he's not standing next to Chris Farley, and that's not really possible these days. So those two films are the... And I don't think those guys did anything else ever again. And, by the way, the proof that they only worked well together... They're like two inert ingredients that only became combustible when they were next to each other. And the proof of that is that Chris Farley did that movie. Do you know the movie he did after Black Sheep? Anybody? No, of course you don't. Beverly Hills Ninja. Terrible film.
Boy.
A terrible film. I mean, I know that you think Beverly Hills Ninja... And you say to yourself, well, that's obviously going to be just Dreck. And I mean, but even Dreck can be funny. I mean, Tommy Boy's not a good movie, really, like in the grand scheme of things. But it is hilarious. I will say this, that sequence in Tommy Boy, where David Spade is engaging in an act of self-love while he's watching the woman in the pool, and then Chris Farley comes in, and they're doing that whole... is your favorite baseball team, the Yankees, that whole speech? Which is... The great thing, too, about Chris Farley, and it's the last thing I'm going to say, and then we'll move on because we got things to get to. But the great thing about Chris Farley that no one really ever was able to match is that full-throated scream that he had, where he would just escalate from just a mild-mannered speaking voice just to that full scraping-the-wall sound of that, like, bellow that he had. And it's just, I think it was because he was a big man, and he just had that massive sort of guttural scream that he was able to do that I think really only fat guys can do properly. It was the same thing that Belushi had and that Sam Kinison had. Just wonderful. Fantastic. Well, that guy's dead. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Before we talk to Scotty, and also today, multiple times, we will spin the wheel of what to do next, because I got a big pile of things that we're never going to get to any other way.
And I'm so excited to play the 90s slow dance songs. I'm having flashbacks to junior high when I went to Catholic school, and we would have, like, the big, dance mixer things.
You know what I was thinking about the other day is that on this program, we do have multiple decades represented. I was just thinking that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
We have, even if you take into account age shaving, we have at least three different decades represented on this program. That truly lets us, we have a wide appeal for that reason, because we can speak to a whole wide swath of the demographic. Yes, Scotty, and you can do the 70s. Tomorrow we'll do the top five 70s slow dance songs. Well, let's get these before we do anything else. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, Rick. It's Timothy Casio Keyboard Tim.
Yes, hello. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, that guy. Anyway,
I like how you use Casio Keyboard, Tim, not the Rick, I took $20 from you and bought crack with it, or whatever the hell you bought. Yeah.
It was heroin, please. Thank
you. All right.
Now, I got some good news for you.
Uh-huh.
I, as you guys, have an obsession for the Black Tiger coffee, right? For Black coffee people.
Uh-huh.
And I found a coffee shop on 65th and Foster. It's called Joe Buddy's Bohemian Coffee Shop. And it's basically a art gallery. And secondary to that is they make the best coffee in town. Now, the real big news is that they were taught by the guys from Coffee People how to actually make it, and he wouldn't tell me the trick, but I taste tested it, and I told him that after drinking it, if it was good enough, I would call Rick Emerson and let you guys know.
Well, you know, and the somebody told me, I forget who it was, somebody told me that the guy who originally founded Coffee People, because it was a husband and a wife, right? Because it was like them, it was like the good coffee, no back talk people, and they had their face. Mm-hmm. And that somebody told me that was the Black Tiger was actually a thing that he created, that it was actually a homemade blend. That guy made in like his basement or something. It was like something like he was down there like some mad scientist. He was like Dr. Bunsen Honeydew with like a white lab coat in the basement, just sort of, you know, brewing it up. And that was the thing that everybody latched onto. So there's that place. And then, of course, there's the Shop People, which is on Grand and Oak. And that's also a Coffee People there. And then I guess the guy who actually founded Coffee People himself, he also runs some coffee shop that's up in like 109 billionth and Stark or something out there. So there's a few places floating around where you can get it because people don't like Starbucks coffee. Hi, thank you. That's Timothy. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How you doing today?
What's up?
Sarah and Tim. Good day.
Hello.
Hi.
You know, I was listening for a traffic report on another station early this morning, and I heard a release that there's a DVD movie coming out today, and the DVD is the movie is about the Darwin Awards.
Oh, that has Winona Ryder in it.
Yeah.
I only know that because I was at Ain't It Cool News, and there was a little banner ad, and it said Darwin Awards coming straight to DVD, and then in huge letters it said, with Winona Ryder. And you wondered, like, how they possibly contrived to get Winona Ryder into a film that's going straight to DVD.
Yeah, no doubt. But the weird thing about this was that this fellow, apparently their producers had...
Let's just cut to the chase. What show were you listening to?
It was our friend Paul Lindman.
Who?
Paul Lindman.
Tim,
the guy that
Paul
blew up
Lindman.
The whale. The guy that blew up the whale.
The reporter on duty when they blew up the whale.
All right, okay. He's on KEX or something,
yes.
Or KXL. Or
they don't blow up whales over there.
One of those stations that I don't listen to. Okay.
Yes.
He's talking about the Darwin Awards and.
And they're using as a musical bed underneath it your the people who died, and I'm just like, wait a minute, hey. That's,
The Jim Carroll band, our Snuffwatch theme.
Yeah.
Imitation is the sincerest form of theft.
Yeah. Hey, one more quick thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm laying in bed the other night. I hear this commercial on the TV. I sent you a YouTube link to it. The greatest thing that Don LaFontaine has ever done.
Yeah, I got your link. That's not Don LaFontaine, by the way.
It's
Don
not.
LaFontaine is the Inner World guy.
Yeah.
That's not the Inner World guy.
Dude, I can guarantee you that you go to his website, you listen to the voice, you go to that commercial, you listen to the voice.
This is a guy. This guy sent me a link to a YouTube. It was a commercial, and it was for like some, I forget what it even was. It was like a home pregnancy test or something, but it was voiced by a big voice guy. The most advanced technology ever, blah, 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 home pregnancy. And unless that guy's got a much broader range than I thought, it's not the Inner World guy.
No, dude, you got to go to his website and listen to his range.
All right.
But
thank
have
you.
A good day.
Bye now. All right. Paul Lindman. Yeah, so I don't know what the deal with that Darwin Awards DVD is, but I see the banner ads for it. So that's probably not his doing, to be fair. That's probably like a national spot or something. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello, how can I help you?
Hey, Rick, this is Smitty in the Southeast. How you doing?
Hi, Smitty? Hi. Really?
Yes, really.
You know, can I just say this? When you say your name is Smitty, here's exactly what I picture. I picture you being one of those guys in that famous photo of New York City where the guys are sitting on a skyscraper, I-beam, 10,000 feet above ground level, drinking their lunch out of a, you know, like a metal bag.
No, actually, I've had that since I was about
with, like, greasy overalls and, like, a rag hanging out of your back pocket. My name's Smitty. I'll see you now.
No, that's the other one.
All right.
Okay. I just found out I'm going to be spending 3 whole days in Kennewick, Washington, while my wife is in a symposium for vegetable growers, and I need some hints on what to do with my time.
Let me understand this. Your wife is going to a symposium in Kennewick?
Yeah, apparently once a year they hold a big... She started an innovative vegetable farming organization here in Portland.
Is the symposium on better places to live?
No, on how to grow better vegetables,
really?
I think.
Hey, you might want to share this story with your wife. This is from the front page of today's Oregonian, since you're going to be in my hometown.
Yeah.
Here's a story from my hometown. from Michael Milstein, front page of today's Oregonian. Crews discovered highly radioactive waste leaking at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation last week, only after workers in protective gear were checking a clogged pump and noticed the ground was, quote, soaked with nuclear sludge.
Oh.
Oh, good time. So enjoy that while you're there. Try not to breathe.
Oh, I saw a billboard for Hermiston watermelons.
Really?
Yesterday. Yeah, it's on I-5.
Fantastic. Just a little mushroom cloud on it. Anyway, so so you're going to Kennewick and what?
Well, there's a three-day symposium. My wife is going to be attending, but I won't.
So
you're going to have my time available to myself.
You're asking what to do in Kennewick.
Yes.
Weep. This is not really. I mean, Jesus. I mean, people. I get this email and this question, this calls and emails about this question amazingly often. People asking what there is to do in Kennewick. I really do get a staggering number of questions about this. Let's see.
How about a brew pub?
No. The only brew pub that I can recommend is a place called, and everything in Kennewick has a name like this. It's actually in Richland, but it's a place called Atomic Ale, where I swear to God they have like plutonium porter and like Hanford Hefeweizen and whatever.
How timely right now.
Yeah, so there's that, but it's in the middle of an acrid wasteland. I mean, there's... There really is nothing. I mean, I hate to sound like it, like Johnny Buzzkill, but I mean, there's just nothing to do in Kennewick. I mean, take a book, take a DVD player, take something to fill your mind, sir, because you're going to get there. And first of all, it's August, or it's going to be August, which means it's going to be about 95 degrees at 11 o'clock at night. So are you staying at a hotel? Are you staying with relatives?
No, it's going to be a hotel.
Okay, you want to find a place, make sure it has air conditioning.
Okay.
Take your allergy medication with you, because it is ragweed season out there.
Oh, my God.
There are no strip clubs to speak of. There's nothing, you know, there's no, you've got nothing. Abandon all hope, sir. Your life is about to get bad.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Oh, well. And you mentioned the other day you like the bacon at Pasta Works. She grows vegetables for Pasta Works. You're an
operator. Excellent. I do love the food at Pasta Works.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I hate to not be able to give you any hope, but really you're going to a hellish place in which there is no fun or entertainment of any kind.
Pretend to be farmer and try to get into the symposium.
My one final observation, then Sarah's going to come and cut my head off if we don't break. While, and this is sincerely, this is true. While you are in Kennewick, go to a place, just look it up in the Yellow Pages or whatever.
The pizza place?
Go to Hubby's Pizza, HUBBY*S, Hubby's Pizza. That is, I'm saying for me now, that is the greatest pizza I have ever had in my life to this day. It's not a chain. It's home. It's a family business. They've had it there forever. They don't give the recipe to anybody else. Hubby's Pizza, it is the best pizza you will ever have.
Rick, you've done it. You've given me hope.
All right, there's a small ray of polluted sunshine for your filth-ridden trip to Kennewick.
Thank you so much.
Bye now.
Bye.
Thank you. All right. We got a break. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up, Lisa Goddard, Ed McCarthy, Tim Riley, and more. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970. This is from the Oregonian. Critics labeled Friday's nuclear waste spill as further evidence, this is my hometown, as further evidence of a bumbling cleanup at the contaminated site in South Central Washington, saying the safety equipment should have immediately detected the leak. You've got some of the most dangerous material ever created by humans in those tanks. The U.S. Department of Energy, which runs the reservation and is overseeing the cleanup, quote, cleanup, could not say Monday how long radioactive material leaked or how much it escaped and seeped into the arid ground. That's wonderful. And the great thing is that caller, his wife, was going here for a vegetable-growing symposium. Here's the contents of the symposium. Don't eat the vegetables. There you go. And you're done.
Fantastic. That makes up for the rave review that I read in the Oregonian yesterday about the Toby Keith concert.
I'm sorry.
It infuriated me.
I didn't even know Toby Keith was here.
He was. Well, when Raul and I were driving to Seattle on Saturday, there was like, beware of heavy congestion due to concert traffic. I'm like, I bet it's some crappy band. You're like, Martina McBride or something. Sure enough, I'm reading the paper yesterday. It's like, Toby Keith sells out, Clark County Amphitheater.
Were we promoting that?
I don't believe so. It was Ford. It's all Ford trucks.
Oh, I see.
Well, I hope we weren't
I'm just saying, was one of our sister stations, perhaps? Well, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care.
It wasn't mentioned in the article. I just read the article about it. Just a review of how funny and giggly he was.
Well, he's a crowd pleaser.
He frustrates me.
We've got this, and then we'll get to Lou at Lisa Goddard. Rick, about Kennewick. To be fair, Rick, there are some decent wineries and wine tasting in the Tri-Cities, but that's about it. Good luck to that guy. The last time I was there, I drove past the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, and I swear to God I had a pain in my head so intense I thought it was going to explode Scanners style. Yeah, it's a bad place. You don't want to go there. It's 503. And do people never ask you about things to do in Bremerton?
Never.
Because people don't really go to Bremerton unless they have a specific reason to.
Mm-hmm.
The damnable misery of Kennewick is that it is, in a weird, hellish sort of way, it's kind of centrally located, and plus 395 runs right through there, and so there's a lot of people who go through there because they're on their way to someplace better, but then they end up having some hideous, like, two-day layover. So, really, the only advice I can give you, sir, if you're going to be spending any amount of time in Kennewick, is just to go to your hotel, turn on the air conditioning, shut the blinds, and drink yourself blind, and pretend that you're somewhere else for a couple of days. That's it. Let's welcome down to the ringer, from the Hill, CNN Radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Why, hello, and how are you?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
See how easy that is to pronounce? See how Goddard just rolls off the tongue? How I look
you
at the page?
Me. I know where you're going with this.
I'm sorry?
I know where you're going. You're not going to get me.
I'm not.
No, just Jardin. There's no. Right. I'm just kidding, Lisa. I'm sorry.
It's days again, and I'm telling you, you guys are going to get on board this train like you don't believe.
Defensive. I'm just saying. I'm just making my observation. That I do believe, look, I'm not going to tell you what to do in your private life, but, you know, you want to change your name, you know, when you get married, you get a different name, and Desjardins, and whatever, and wear a beret, that's fine.
See, you guys are doing us a favor here, because this is all of the great success stories in mankind's history have started out this way, you know, people thrown out by their own kind, and then turning the people around. I think that you are actually helping us out. We're like Apple stock, as Apple was just forming.
Yeah, it's funny you say Apple, because I was just going to say, yes, you're regular Isaac Newton. No, that's fine. I mean, look, it sounds as though somebody has prepared her talking points about the name, because it sounds like someone is trying to pull a little bit of a Tony Snow job on us here with the name. Look, and I mean this with all sincerity. If this is something that Jason wants his last name, and you feel like in your married life it's something you should go along with or something you like, that is certainly fine, and I do mean that honestly. I do not mean that in an Eddie Haskell kind of way. However, I'm just saying, in my broadcasting opinion, I just feel like perhaps it is not the strongest choice. If only, and let me just also make this observation about this, your, what is it, putative? What is that word I'm looking for? Blah, 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 last name, whatever, your soon-to-be last name.
Yes, okay.
The other problem with Desjardins is that, and I mean this linguistically speaking, it is just a soft name. It's a soft-sounding name. There's no oomph to it. There's no aggression. It's got no edges. It's got no hard, flat surfaces to it. It's all...
Oh, come on. It starts with a D. D's kind of... That's a little,
Yeah, but then it just sort of peters out into a puff of purple, lilac-scented smoke.
Desjardins. Come on.
It just... I'm sorry. Would you do that sound one more time? I don't really know that you could sell that, but that's cheap, but I like hearing you try. It's fantastic. Whatever. I'm sure you'll hear from the people about this. I'm not gonna. I mean, it's just, you know.
Okay.
Have you asked your friends and colleagues what they think of it?
There are mixed opinions at CNN for sure.
Uh-huh.
Mixed opinions. There is a CNN producer that thinks I should, like you, that I should keep my current name. But there are others that are all aboard that are, you know, embracing this, you know, rolling around in it. It's great.
Uh-huh. Somebody, we have a listener who is a copywriter who has just emailed to us.
Okay.
And he says, as a copywriter, doesn't this sound like some sort of a tagline? It's not delivery. It's Desjardins. Okay. Well, I'm just going to pass that along.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, well, let's talk about Chief Justice John Roberts. Yes?
Is Jason on the phone right now?
I'm sorry?
I think Jason is on the phone waiting to talk to you.
Oh, wait. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know. I swear to God, I hadn't even looked at my screen.
Be Jason?
No, he's building up to something. I figured you had some master plan, and so I was just waiting.
No. To be honest, I wasn't even looking at the screen. I had my call screening software minimized. All right, hold on a second.
All right.
All right. Just one second before we do anything else. Let's just...
Scotty J.
Yeah, you're making him sweat.
I wish I knew how to do it.
Please, I kiss you on the mouth. Please let me.
Scotty J.
Good morning, Metolius.
Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, our PA, Scotty J. Hi, Scotty. How are you doing today?
Well, good morning, Deadwood.
Okay. I see you're wearing a brand new Rush shirt. Is that from your Rush concert?
That's right. Are you listening, Lisa?
Yes. A.K.A. the best concert ever.
A.K.A. best concert ever.
Scotty had sent me a text message. When he was at the show, I got this text message from Scotty at like 10:49. He's like, best effing concert ever. They are rocking. You should be here.
They opened up with Limelight.
All right.
No, wait, you're serious. That's amazing.
Oh, really? I've seen them 4 times. I love them.
Hey. No way to tell you how little I care about this. This is Jason Sporbert here on the line.
Yes, and then right.
What's your read on Jason as a man?
Did he sound like he was very serious, very manly?
Really?
Very,
sound like
ooh,
he was
serious.
Like he was ready to come on and defend this choice of name.
Oh, absolutely. And then we have another guy that has a suggestion for them both, which is pretty good, actually.
Well, I suspect the door on that may have been closed, Scotty. But
I know, but it's good.
Well, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Jason at the moment, Sporbert. Hey, Jason, how you doing?
Bonjour, Rick Emerson. This is Jason Desjardins. How is that for some oomph?
Oh, no. Can I have some fries?
Is this really?
Is this
your fiance?
Really? Would you,
all right. This is enough of making fun of Jason Desjardins.
Would you?
While he's not there to defend himself.
Would you like to come back on and try your intro again, Jason?
Okay.
All right. Hi, Jason Sporbert. Now on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hi there, Portland, Oregon. This is Jason Desjardins. Does that sound a little bit more American? A little tougher.
You know,
there's not enough oomph in the name, I know. But there's more oomph in Desjardins than Sporbert.
You know, I'm just...
Well, now let's...
It's a really good time for me to point out that, to my knowledge, this is the first time Jason's ever been on the radio.
Really?
I'm just pointing that out at this
time. Do you feel it's working out exactly as you hoped it would, Lisa?
Yeah, that's right. I'm supposed to start with a long-time listener, first-time caller, right?
You know...
Wrong
show.
A little angry.
I'm saying there's a little bit of defensiveness and feistiness happening. All right, Jason, here, as you know, we have been talking to Lisa about this business of the last name for quite some time now. And I think she floated this Desjardins business. I don't know.
Is it Desjardins?
I don't know. No one knows. It doesn't matter because nobody's going to pronounce it correctly anyway.
It sounds like a mustard of
some
sort. Look,
I'm not trying to be a negative Nelly about it. I'm really not. I'm really not. I'm just saying, I'm pointing out the obvious, which is that this is a name that's going to be mispronounced. It's a lifetime for your children if you have them of, you know, what is it? I mean, how do you pronounce that? What the hell? What's going on? Teachers are going to, they never know how to say it. So I'm not trying to be pejorative about it. I'm just pointing out that these
I don't know.
Facts.
It sounds like when you're pointing out the obvious is that you're racist against the French. It sounds like me.
Well,
they're freedom fries here in Oregon.
I don't really know that that's racism so much as it is just common sense, my friend.
I think you're jealous because Portland, Maine has a plethora of Desjardins, and there's probably only a handful in Portland, Oregon.
A plethora. And then Oregon, all in one sentence. All right, so Desjardins, so this is a family name of yours?
That is correct.
All right. Now, if I may ask, and again, I don't mean to pry. Now, are you choosing this name of Desjardins, which, again, and I have to note this, but if you didn't hear this yesterday, this is not spelled at all how it sounds, so it's kind of an interesting name linguistically. Now, are you choosing this primarily because of its history as a family name or primarily because you guys sort of just like it as a name? In other words, to what extent does the family factor enter into this?
The family factor has some influence on this, but really, Lisa said, you know what? I think that the world needs more redheaded French-named reporters.
All right.
She said, that's a niche. You know, I could make some real money on that.
It's a French niche.
I said,
seriously?
All right, that's what you want.
Do you have, like, some different set of words or something that you give us, some different pronunciation guide in D.C. that you guys use?
It's a drinking game that we're playing right now to see who can slip more. Then we have a bet.
This is all very chaotic, so if you guys can hold on just 1 second.
Yeah.
Scotty, I hear Steve Kastenbaum calling on the other line. Can you talk to CNN and see if we can move him until a little later?
Okay.
Because I don't wish for him to call in and for him to be frustrated in his attempts to get through.
Okay.
Thank you. I heard a beep, which we get like a call waiting thing here that happens whenever somebody else is trying to call in. So I want to make sure that Steve Kastenbaum doesn't think he's being ignored. All right. So what were the other, if I can ask, before ye settled on Desjardins, what were there finalists? Was there another name that at least was competitive?
You know,
well, I mean, Skywalker was up there.
from KCMD. That's right. Blackwell was in there.
Blackwell's a great name.
Blackwell
I can't really
name.
Seriously. I think I speak for all of us here at the Rick Emerson Show when I say Blackwell is a fantastic name. I can't speak highly enough of that name.
Yeah. We've heard that for months now.
I like my observations.
Never in the running.
My
I will say that one of my
no
favorites
weight.
Was version 1.0. And every year we would upgrade.
All right. Well, this is going badly. I can't even tell you what.
I don't know what to make of this at all.
Uh-huh.
I really did think about Blackwell. I really liked Blackwell, but it was definitely low on the list. But Thomas was a real consideration for a while.
Well, Thomas is okay. The only problem is Jason Thomas, Lisa Thomas. Those both sound like radio names. They both because it's too
it's much so,
and it's two first names, Jason Thomas. It's like when you meet a guy, like, what's your name? My name is Dave Todd. My name is, you know, we work with a guy whose given name actually is John Paul, and it sounds absolutely like either ought to have a big hat on or that it's a radio name, which it's not. All right, let's get Justin here. Justin is weighing in with a name, although I think that horse may have left the barn. Justin, what do you got, brother?
Okay, well, Lisa, humor me here for a second.
Okay.
I have a suggestion. My last name actually is White Man. You could say hi. I'm Lisa. Lisa what? Lisa White Man.
Yeah, this is a guy who calls us occasionally to give us, quote, the white man's perspective. All right. Thank you, Justin.
We need that.
All right, there you go.
Oh, Farnsworth, I really liked.
I loved Lisa Farnsworth, by the way.
Yeah,
that's
that too.
Fantastic. Now, again, linguistically not.
I don't like Farnsworth because that was the name of an Atlanta Brave pitcher, and being a Philadelphia Phillies fan, you know, I just couldn't do that.
Well, you know what? That you could have found an athlete. You could have been, you could have been, God, I'm trying to think of an athlete.
Eric Desjardins.
I'm trying to think of an athlete whose name you could have used.
Hockey great Eric Desjardins.
Like Lemieux, another French name.
You could have been Lisa. You could have been Lisa Monroe after Earl the Pearl.
Lisa Lemieux. I kind of like that.
That's kind of good.
Lisa Lemieux.
You know,
what
do you think? But it sounds too much like Pepe Le Pew.
That's what I was thinking.
All of these names are going to get your children punched in the face. Let me just say that's to be...
Can you guys understand, though, how someone with the name...
Hey, I want my children to grow up tough,
yeah,
you know?
Well, I suppose if my...
If they have a tough last name and no one ever messes with them, they're not going to understand how tough life will be later on.
When you say Lemieux, I just picture what's his name, that Milhouse kid on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jason, I know you're probably busy, so we will let you go here. Thank you so much for tolerating our juvenile foolishness, Jason, and coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. Thank you, sir, and congratulations on your impending nuptials.
Thank you very much, and congratulations for getting to talk to Lisa every day.
Well,
she's a brilliant journalist.
It is the highlight.
And she
of
knows
our
a lot about pop culture nowadays.
That is true. She threw in a Footloose reference just the other day. Let me ask you just one final question. Are you aware that your fiance Lisa Goddard read the last page of the Harry Potter novel first?
Yes, I am.
All right. How do you feel about that?
It doesn't surprise me.
All right. Thank you, Jane.
She likes to cheat a little bit.
Oh, that's
she's
so
a cheater.
Uh-oh.
Okay,
she's sneaky. Okay. She's a reporter. That's what they do.
All right.
Oh.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, my God.
All right, we're going to put Jason back on.
That's not a good way to start.
There's multiple levels of problems now that I didn't have before this conversation started.
He did just call you a cheater, Lisa.
Seriously.
He called me a cheater, and I may have a last name now that rhymes with Pepe Le Pew, and... I've got to tell you, I love this man immensely, but it's bad when someone's trying to be funny.
Let me ask you this: on the classic,
sorry, Jason, I'm calling you out a little bit.
That's right, hung up. On the on the classic 1 to 10 scale, how would you rate Jason's first appearance on a radio program?
I've heard far worse.
All right.
I'd put him at a 5. I feel like he had some real ups and little downs.
That's okay. You know, Scotty tries to be funny every day, and it's never successful. So.
I really should have. You know, I threw him to the wolves. I should have said, hey, just be yourself. I should have said, no French accent. Maybe that's all I needed to say.
Yeah. It's okay. And it's Oregon. That's okay. I'm nitpicking now. So all right. Well,
is it just me or is seriously plethora? Is that?
I think that's an. Let's be kind and call that an alternative pronunciation.
I think that word. Oh, God bless him. I just love that man. But that was really hilarious.
Right. Well, when you get a chance,
you guys are getting a very strange view of Jason Sporbert. That's for sure.
Well, thank him for coming on when you get a chance.
I will.
Tell him we appreciate him tolerating our inanity.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a sign of how I think how much he was thinking about this particular appearance.
Let me. Can I just ask
he
you
really
one?
Put his all into
well,
it.
Well, I was just going to say. Now, is this really was this a thing that he knew about yesterday, or is this a thing you sprung on him today?
Right. No, I called him yesterday when we got off the phone. You know, when you put me on hold, and I said, "Hey, let's try and get him right now," which I think it would have turned out radically differently.
Yeah.
But he was in a meeting, so we had to put it off until today.
All right. Excellent. Well, we do appreciate it. So he was, I can tell he was giving it the college try. So that.
He was. And then you know, and two final points, really quick. I really think you guys are going to embrace Desjardins. I think you're going to love it. And then, and number two, Ted Stevens is in really big trouble.
Oh, this is the senator, he's the Alaska guy.
He is the senior senator from Alaska. In fact, he has been there so long that he was part of the movement to make Alaska a state.
And I always ask this, but is he the guy who said the internet was a series of tubes?
You know, I don't know that.
I think it might have been him. I think he might have been the one who said the internet's a series of tubes. I have audio of that somewhere, but I don't know where it is. But I'm pretty sure that is him. And so because is like some corruption probe or something?
Yeah, the deal is this. And in fact, every member of the Alaska delegation, there are three, has been under some scrutiny recently. But Ted Stevens now has federal investigators, FBI agents and IRS agents now have raided his home in Alaska.
That's no bad.
The reason is, we think, this home underwent major renovation. In fact, it was doubled in size in 2000. That renovation was overseen by essentially a man who owned a very large oil company. He was the one who got the bills from the contractors. Now, Stevens paid the bills, but the bills went first to this oil company man. His name's Bill Allen, and Bill Allen has since been convicted and confessed to trying to bribe public officials in Alaska. So there are a lot of very large question marks over Ted Stevens right now. Now, he hasn't been found guilty, hasn't been charged with anything, but still, when you have FBI agents raiding a senior senator's home, you know that there are certainly serious reasons, or you would hope there are serious reasons. Especially, this is a Republican. It's a Republican Justice Department. So there's something very serious going on.
It's hard to believe that he'd be involved then in some scandal involving an oil company. That just stuns me.
I know. Isn't that this is the senator who has pushed for years and years for that drilling in Anwar in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge. And you are right. Now I'm looking up online. Series of tubes.
And I can't find the audio. I did have it at one point. We said, the internet's a series of tubes. So. All right.
Wait, do you know what the context was for that?
He was talking about, I wish I could find it. And somebody's going to send it to me, but it's part of like a 10-minute interview he did. He was talking about the importance of...
I have the quote here.
He says,
the internet is not something you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Oh, no, it's wonderful. It's one of the best sound bites ever. He was talking about the internet economy. And
goodness.
He did use that phrase. He says
those tubes can be filled, and if they are filled, when you put your message in, it gets in line.
Yeah, it's not just that he called the internet a series of tubes, although that is fantastic. It's that it is that he said it in that sort of like quavering old man kind of voice. It was, well, it's a series of tubes. And I mean,
he may have been speaking metaphorically. That seems possible here, but it's definitely not clear.
No. And we don't really care about that. If we can paint it to look ridiculous, that's all that matters to us. All right. Oh, wait, here we go. Here we go. Wait, I have the sounder.
Brilliant. Great.
I have the sounder, and then we got to bring the curtain down because I know we're taking you way late, and
this is the craziest live shot we've done. Okay, hold on, because I've got to dial in for CNN on the other line, but keep moving.
Already alienated Steve Kastema. All right, here we go.
But they want to deliver vast amounts of information over the internet, and again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
That's wonderful. Excellent. All right.
It's fantastic. All right. And Jason's first appearance on radio. Thank you guys for being very kind. And hopefully not his last. Hopefully he can learn from this experience. I think it was delightful.
Oh, yeah. I see a weekend show in his future.
It's I'll tell you what. He's an awesome guy. I hope we get to come to Portland and hang out with you guys.
You seem very nice. So congratulations again to you guys. And we'll talk to you soon, Lisa.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye now. All right. There you go. That's Lisa Goddard. Well, that was just an action-packed, headache-inducing segment. All right.
I felt like Lisa was the girl torn between two men when you guys were both on.
Well, you know, I was...
The second Jason opened his mouth, I could hear her head just going, this is a bad idea.
I think I think she's going to have the idea that it was a bad choice reinforced when she gets home today. I think she's going to have it. I think she's going to have it underlined for her that it was a poor idea. That's just a hunch, by the way. Oh my God! All right, Jesus, we have to break.
When's Steve Kastenbaum?
Well, oh Jesus, for the love of Holy Christ!
Daddy J,
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Please, can I kiss you on the mouth? Please let me.
I love the sounder.
Good morning, Metolius.
Hi, Scotty. All right, so what is
how's it going?
What is the deal with Steve Kastenbaum?
12:05.
Well, that's just not going to work.
Okay.
We'll just have to blow him off today. And I would you please apologize to him for
okay.
me? You're doing that thing.
I'm having a bad day.
Why?
Why?
Because.
Why?
Damn.
Why? Does it rhyme with
things
smoke?
Things are a little tipsy-topsy around here.
They're
so.
Skipsy.
Does it rhyme with bung over?
No. Maybe. No.
Bung over? I think it's a movie I saw one time.
Okay. So I will go back and call
someone. No. Now I just want to know what you mean when you say things are tipsy-topsy. I don't even know what that
okay,
means.
Okay. Well.
Is that a children's movie?
You asked me to reschedule it, and the only time was this time. I rescheduled it, and now we're canceling it. So, I mean...
I'll cancel it, Scotty.
Okay.
Well, I feel bad because...
I'll let him on the air.
Not because
I don't want
gonna...
Scotty to feel badly.
Well, because it's going to cut into Tim's news time.
Yes.
And it's just, you know, and well, I don't want to start the news hour.
Scotty's little spark is fading. I'll do it for you, Scotty.
I can
go
do
put,
it.
But no, blame it on me. Put a smile on your face and I'll call
him and blame it on me and just say, look, we told Rick he had to do this, but he went way over time. You know, he
okay.
loved, just tell him, yeah, look, he knows we love him, but it's just, there's
well,
just,
it's not him. You have to call Laura.
Right.
Well.
But that's fine.
Totally. Just blame it on me. And, you know, really, let's be honest. I can count on less than two fingers the number of times we've ever canceled somebody. And it's been Steve, actually, both times. But I can very, very, very rarely do we do that. I can count on, like, 50 fingers the number of times that she screwed us on somebody. So,
okay.
I'm sorry. Was that out loud? So, is it, I mean, so are
yeah,
you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Tell her that Rick apologizes personally
okay.
to her and that he does, that I do not take the CNN bookers for granted.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. What's up with that guy?
I don't know.
Seriously.
I feel bad now.
Why?
I don't. He looks like a dog that's been kicked.
Yes. Yes, he does. Our plan is working. It's 503-733-2970. Tim Riley, when we come back, have ye prepared news?
I do, but we can take the CNN correspondent if you
no,
still desire.
No, it's too... Should we just do it so Scotty doesn't freak out?
Yes,
no.
Let's do it. I'm sure he'll...
Fine. We'll take Steve Kastenbaum then. Fine.
Scotty, uncancel that cancellation.
Call Laura back again. And then call her three more times. And then giggle and hang up. Tell her you're looking for huge ass. All right, back after this with Steve Kastenbaum, Tim Riley, and later on more stories of comedy. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Oh, yeah. Sweet God. Hi. You're on the Rick Emerson. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Show. We're going to get Steve Kastenbaum here in just a second. Then we'll have Tim Riley at the noon news hour at the desk and the plays. I'm sorry. Walking back in and running behind and late and so forth. So we talked to Lisa Goddard. We're going to have Steve Kastenbaum in a second. And then we'll have not Rachel McGrath. We will have Ed McCarthy later on. And then the top five coming up. Tim Riley, Dennis Pitzenberger, all that. Okay. Ready? Break. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from New York City, our good friend Steve Kastenbaum. Hello, Steve. How are you today?
Doing good. Fresh back from Puerto Rico.
I'm sorry about the delay, by the way. There was a whole... We had something run amok in the last hour, and I apologize for that. I don't want you to have to rearrange your whole schedule because of us, so sorry about that.
No worries.
How is Puerto Rico?
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Have you ever been?
No, all I know about Puerto Rico is that I found Rita Moreno really hot in West Side Story, and she is my knowledge of Puerto Rico comes entirely from that film.
Well, who didn't find her, you know, appealing?
It's not just appealing. Really, I would encourage you maybe you're not a fan of West Side Story, maybe, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. If you are, if you haven't seen it in a long time, go back and get the DVD or watch a good clean, like occasionally around here they'll throw up West Side Story on one of the big screens. And you watch West Side Story, and Rita Moreno, I mean, I know that Natalie Wood is the presumptive star of that film, and the love interest and so forth, but, I mean, Rita Moreno is just unbelievably scorchingly hot in that film. I mean, so hot that it just defies description.
I'll have to watch it again.
Yeah, she really is great. The best part, and now this is sort of just untold layers of weirdness, because two men here describing a weird sexual, the sexual undertones of a bizarre scene with Rita Moreno in West Side Story. But the strangest scene in that movie, in West Side Story, is when the Jets and the Sharks are getting ready to rumble, right? And it's the same night that what's-his-name, Tony and Maria are going to run away, or they're going to do whatever, and they're singing the Tonight Tonight medley.
Right.
And so Rita Moreno is sitting there in the apartment, and she's powdering her face or whatever. She's getting ready. She's sitting in front of the mirror, and she's putting on her makeup for her man, what's his name, Bernardo, who is the leader of the Sharks, because they're going to rumble with the Jets. And the clear implication is that Bernardo gets all, like, hot and bothered from rumbling, and then he comes home and, like, takes it out on her. And so that, so she's all excited because she's going to have all this hot, sweaty post-rumble sex with Bernardo. It's just really weird and kind of cool. So
right. I forgot about that scene. That's right.
Just move on and talk about something manly. I'm going to mention something else to you before we kind of finish today, but this, I know that Rupert Murdoch is, I'm reading The Bronx is Burning, as I told you, that book by Jonathan Mahler that you mentioned to me, and he weaves together a whole lot of narratives in there. One of them is Reggie Jackson and the 77 Yankees, the other is Son of Sam, the other is the race for the mayorship of New York City, and yet another story arc in that book is Rupert Murdoch and his acquisition of newspapers here in America. And is he just, I mean, does he have any, not rhyme or reason, but I mean, is his goal just to own as many pillars of the American media as he possibly can?
It sort of seems that way on the surface, and he owns a lot of tabloids around the world, not just, you know, Australia and New York. So he's got a huge media empire already to begin with. And, of course, there's Fox News, which is Rupert Murdoch. So the whole idea here is to get the Wall Street Journal under that umbrella so we could have sort of this seamless package of information under the Fox banner. I presume their whole plan is to incorporate, you know, the Wall Street Journal business reporting into the Fox product. Yeah. So
I didn't know whether you were pausing or whether it was the end of a sentence. Anyway, but I know that there's this the whole debate about whether it's going to go through or not. And is that the stockholders that have said? Is it the shareholders? Is it? I mean, I don't even know if there's like regulatory agencies that have to be appeased with this kind of thing. It seems like those things must be in place, or else, as I said earlier, he and Google would just end up owning 90% of all the things there were to own in this country.
Well, that's what happens in a free market economy. Now. Yeah, so the thing now, though, is the Bancroft family. They own a controlling share in voting stock in Dow Jones and Company, which publishes, amongst many other publications, the Wall Street Journal. And now, today, we get word now on the Wall Street Journal's website that 32% of the Bancroft family members are now poised to approve this deal. And that, combined with other voting shareholders, is enough for the deal to be approved. We'll find out later tonight. But then the regulatory commissions, you know, the stock market regulatory officials, they have to approve the deal. And it might undergo some government scrutiny, but it doesn't look like there's any real opposition to this. And the thing here was that we had heard that some of the Bancroft family members were concerned about the future of the Wall Street Journal and its integrity, and would he come in and gut the institution and turn it into something other than what it is now and lower the standards. And in the end, it apparently just boiled down to more money and who is going to pay for the legal fees and the advisor's fees.
Well, of course, that's what it always...
Yeah.
People will always say, well, what's at stake here is integrity and morality and the long-standing... But it's always just like trying to jack the price up another 12%. Clearly, that's not like he's going to be putting a page 3 girl in the Wall Street Journal or something anyway. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that would ruin the product that he wants to use to give his... you know, Fox Network some more credibility, you know.
And before we go, I just want to say again, I'm about two-thirds of the way through The Bronx is Burning, the book, after which I will watch the miniseries on ESPN. But it's a fantastic book. I'm really into it. So thank you for tipping me to that, my friend.
Did you get get on onto the part where they're just rioting and going crazy in Bushwick during the blackout.
No, I'm just leading up to that point right now. I'm just to that point.
Oh,
so,
we've got to talk about that after you're done with that section of the book. Because I was a kid when that stuff was going on.
I will absolutely. I should finish it within a day or two, and then we'll absolutely talk about it again because I got a million questions for you.
Oh, great! I can't wait.
All right, cool. Thank you, my friend.
Okay. Bye bye.
Steve Kastenbaum in New York City. For the love of God, let's begin the news hour.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour on AM970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Does anybody watch the television program, Little People, Big World?
I have watched
I've seen it.
And our good friend Dean Hockman, who is in Bigger Than Jesus, is one of the producers on that film.
Well, Matt Ratliff, best known for that family program, has been arrested and charged with DUI, but it happened last month. So where's the media been since then? He's 45 years old. He got arrested on June 19th. He was pulled over just before midnight near Northwest Union Road and Northwest Cornelius Pass Road in Washington County. Why, that's my neighborhood. These people are driving around here. Washington County Sheriff's officials said he failed a field sobriety test and then refused a breath test. He was booked in Washington County Jail and then been released. So that's that. The Ratliffs have most recently been in the news when their 9-year-old son Jason was injured by that pumpkin catapult at the family farm.
Oh, right. I remember all about that. Yeah. So, and then, of course, it's a family of little people, right?
Yeah.
Are they all little people?
Yeah.
I've only seen the show a couple of times.
I've never seen them around.
It's an interesting...
Well, I haven't. I mean, I live in the same area
as they do.
You'd think they'd be at least at the streets of Tanisport shopping.
I mean... that's an interesting concept, though. You don't really think about that if you are a little person, I guess it takes proportionally less to intoxicate you. And I guess maybe probably like a third of what it would take a normal-sized person to become, to get whatever the .08 or whatever the hell it is. So that's interesting. All right.
Beaverton police have arrested a man accusing him of exposing himself at the Beaverton City Library. They were called to the library around noontime yesterday. Because the library staff saw a man who matched the description of a suspect who exposed himself 2 weeks earlier, apparently he came back. The man exposed his genitals to a woman in the juvenile section. He left the library, and they couldn't find him. Then yesterday, 54-year-old Joseph Bolton of Portland spotted detectives at the library and immediately left. As he walked outside, he saw uniformed officers waiting for him and ran back inside. He was eventually detained inside the building's elevator. They were able to link him to a July 18th flashing incident at the library. He's taken to the jail. So he's 54 years old. He left Portland to do some flashing in Beaverton, allegedly. A month ago, 1 month after Scottie Pippen sold his Portland mansion at a loss, another former Trailblazer is trying to unload his property. Detroit Pistons and former Blazers, Rasheed Wallace, apparently is selling his 9,914-square-foot home in the Dunthorpe, for $5.2 million. Originally, he wanted $5.5 million when he put up the house for sale last year.
Wait, these are homes they have here?
Yeah.
So they still have... Oh, they did the...
investment.
They did the Liz Wilde thing. Just buying a home while they're here, then worry about selling it later when they're living in Dallas.
Right. Nothing wrong with that. The value goes up. Except this time. Originally, he wanted $5.5 million. Now he has to settle for $5.2 million. Wallace and his wife, Fatima, bought the 5-bedroom home in 2000 for $3.5 million. So he's going to make a little bit of a profit. Let's see here. The Pippins paid $4 million in 2000 for their 18,000-square-foot home. That's 18,000 square feet. Imagine that.
I don't even know what that means.
It's huge.
I mean, we're now entering into the Tim and Scotty section of the program. Sarah and I were noting that probably now, I would say 4 days out of five on a given week, I will walk by the kitchen and something like I'll be heading to the bathroom or I'll be getting some coffee or whatever. And Sarah, it is kind of great and sort of we all just settle into our morning routine. Sarah will be in here and she's updating her blog and she's reading, gossip news and having breakfast or whatever. And I'm off doing, I'm in there making coffee or I'm going upstairs or, my bathroom break that I take at the same time every morning. And then you and Scotty will settle down just like hummingbirds on a feeder and just sitting in there and eating breakfast and talking about real estate, which is just fantastic.
And chuckling together and being like, oh, let me tell you.
Seriously, and just giggling under your breath at Sarah and I who rent and don't own and don't have any sort of financial stability in our lives.
And whose problem is that? One might only look in the mirror to find the answer. It's not like the knowledge is not available on the premises for changing that situation, now is it?
There really are two camps here in that sense, which is, no, I'm just saying it's great. But when you say, like, imagine 18,000 square feet, I don't even know how many square feet my house is. I have no idea. Really, honestly, I could.
I think I lived in an 1,100 square foot house once.
Maybe. Couldn't tell you. I could not possibly tell you
how many
square feet my house is.
I'll take a rough guess.
So
you live in a duplex.
No, I do not live in a duplex.
They just
that back. You just said that to irritate me.
No, there are two houses that are joined together by a common wall, are they not?
No, you bastards. There is no common wall.
I'm just saying, a single family home.
I do.
They're painted the same color. Same style.
They are
connected
two,
by the same roof.
I'll get my roommate on next door neighbor on the phone right now. I'll do it.
I have Megan's number. I'll call her.
Okay, you get
Landlord on the phone. I don't care what the tenant has to say. I want to know what the landlord should know what he owns.
All right, I'm gonna dial her.
I have my landlord's number. I get him too. You bastards.
Such an issue whether or not this is a single family or a duplex? It looks like a duplex to me.
It's not a duplex.
All right,
it's not a tumor. Are you calling Megan?
Don't you want me to?
Sure, fine. I'm going to call my neighbor. You know, she's probably sleeping
well,
it
anyway,
off right
now. To make a long story short, 18,000 square feet is huge.
All right.
Because my house is, let's see, 1,800 square feet. It's 3-bedroom.
Okay, so mine is 2-bedroom.
But it matters how big the rooms are.
Here you go, Rick. Talk to her.
Is this Megan?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll see.
I would safely say yours is around 1,400 square feet. This is 18,000.
Please leave your message for Megan.
Oh, well, never mind.
Record your
all right.
message.
Hold on. Well, no, I'll record my message.
To send a numeric page, press 5. When you are finished recording, hang up. Or for delivery options, press pound.
What does that mean, delivery options?
You can send it like...
Hey, Megan, this is...
by a stork.
Hi, this is Rick Emerson, girly. Hey, do me a favor. Will you call us here at the show when you get a chance? It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970.
I'm looking to find out to see if you're Zen that you live in a duplex.
It's not a duplex. See, you're prejudicing her response before she even calls.
Share a roof.
Anyway, Megan, if you could just call us at the show, that'd be great. Thank you. Bye now.
Right. Do you share any common walls?
We do not have a common wall, you sons of bitches. I'm going to wear a T-shirt.
How much space is there between
that says
your...
I do not share a common wall with my neighbor?
Because... How much space is there between your duplex and her duplex?
Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
So to make a long story short, 18,000 square feet is huge.
George Lucas, here's the only thing I know about square footage. When I was a kid, I remember reading that George Lucas had a 64,000 square foot home. And I don't know whether that's probably not totally true. That probably is like his home and his sort of studio all hooked into one. But that's it. So square footage is one of those things I don't really know. So keep in mind, though, someday when I, and when I say I mean my wife, when my wife decides to become financially stable and get real estate, have no doubt she will be going right to you.
Right.
Because you really, I
the
think...
The sooner the better.
No, and I think in her world, and I think in our world, you are, and I'm not saying that this isn't true, but I'm saying I do believe you are, you probably have attained status as most knowledgeable person we know in terms of real estate. I think you are the go-to real estate person in our world.
And you get that knowledge by passing by the kitchen when Scotty and I are sitting
there. Through osmosis. I get it in little bits and pieces. All right.
But anyway, so much for that story. That just gets us nowhere. Now here comes a serious story, so let's all be serious. A resident of that Milwaukee apartment complex, where a 15-year-old was strangled over the weekend, told K2... Notice I'm giving them credit because that's where I'm stealing the story from. Tells K2 that on the day of the murder, she saw two men drag a person into an apartment. Now, why on earth didn't she call the police right then instead of waiting for K2 to come over? The woman says she went out to her deck to have a smoke, of course. And this was about 6 a.m. She heard noises. There was a disturbance behind the apartment. They were screaming, shut up in Spanish. She saw two men dragging a person back into the apartment, apartment 21, and the person was covered with a blanket. 2 hours later, Ashley Countryman discovered her 15-year-old sister, Danny, dead. This girl, who was visiting a relative, her sister, who lives in this apartment complex, went to a party in this complex that night. Now, we have to ask this question. So since her sister knows this is a troublemaking apartment complex and has had 54 police calls so far this year, why on earth did she choose to take her sister to a party?
Did she take the sister to the party, or did the sister go of her own accord, do you suppose? How old is the girl who was killed?
15-year-old sister.
Was 15.
Mm-hmm.
How old is the sister? Well, old enough to have her own place.
The pair had gone to a party in the complex that night.
And the sister is presumably old enough to have her own apartment, right? It was her place.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where is this at?
This is at Clackamas County, Milwaukee.
Enough said.
So 54 calls to this apartment.
Let's go to a party. Where is it? Well, it's next door.
These are the Balboa apartments.
Was I talking about this in the area?
The complex is patrolled, it's so bad. And residents confirm a private security company does make visits there, but apparently they were
there. A lot of good that apparently did. So this is. I spent Sunday in Clackamas. I was having some work done on my car, and walked off to get lunch. And you just walk past just these hideous apartment complexes. I mean, I suppose it's all relative. I mean, it's not like you're in the Cabrini Green housing project or something. But I mean, it's still bad. I mean, look, let's just be honest. Let's not pretend that you can't judge a book by its cover. You can look at a bad apartment. Look, you can look at the place where I live. You can just tell. You can tell it's a bad place.
You could change that.
I don't know, Tim. There's so much about real estate I do not understand. Is it possible for someone like myself of meager means to afford a home?
Yes, man.
Genius. Well, in any event. So this, now, did they catch the people who did this?
No.
So, but the...
So the woman... Apparently, who heard this decides not to call the police.
No, of course not. Why? Where? Wait for the wait for.
But
the
thank
media.
Goodness for K2 to come over and unveil this. So,
well,
but if you're living in one of these places,
well, I mean, then that's, it's like, and I. We don't know this to be true, but it then seems that maybe one hypothesis is the sister takes her to the party,
she says whoever did this had the guts to carry her body back into the apartment, put a blanket over her face, and lie her there with somebody else inside, which is ridiculous.
And did they find her back in the sister's apartment?
Yeah.
So maybe
she found her dead in the apartment.
So the sister came. So the sister takes it, presumably. Mm-hmm. This is just my speculation. So presumably the sister takes her to the party. They get separated at the party because the sister doesn't keep track of her. The girl ends up going out back into an alley with somebody or some buddies who then kill her. And then they dump her body back in the sister's apartment?
Yeah, apparently. So.
How would they even know where she lived? If she doesn't...
Well, they know her sister.
So it had...
Allegedly.
Again, and just my supposition. But,
I mean, we're not amateur sleuths here.
No, well, no. We're just making things up, really. But then it would seem that...
It's like some Mike Hammer.
I was just going to say it's what I get for watching too many episodes of Homicide.
Need a fedora and a cigarette.
And a dame out front to take the calls.
Hey, Vera.
But it would then seem that it would have to be somebody who knew the sister and who knew this girl was related to the sister. Because it's like, how would you even know where to dump her body? Like, that's just a crapshoot otherwise. Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, somebody sent me a website. You can type in your address and it'll give you all the information about the home you live in. Let's see if it works.
Oh, yeah, it's all public information.
Let's see if it works. I'm typing it in now. Watch this website be owned by some nutcase listener that stalks me.
Yeah, I never put my address in those things. Wait,
well,
no, Rick.
I've done it.
Well, no, who owns real estate is public information.
Oh, it's busy.
Right, the county tax website can tell you also.
Really?
All about it, yeah.
All right.
When it was built, how many square feet, when it was sold?
All right.
What it's worth?
Oh, this guy has a great point, actually, about square footage on this old house. Hi, what's up?
I'm sorry I'm a little late on this conversation. I had to spend about 15 minutes explaining to Scotty that Shop People is new advertiser.
Yes, yes, yes they are.
But Shop People, which is a massive...
We had a discussion with Scotty last hour about that, actually.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I missed that.
No, it's okay. It was off the air.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry about it. I'm sorry, a little shop talk there. Go ahead.
Well, Shop People is 17,000. Square feet.
That is true, yes.
That is a huge, huge area.
Shop People isn't. They are, in fact, thank you, sir, a new advertiser. And we always reference the fact they got that coffee people upstairs. And they are an entire city block, actually. It's on Oak and Grand. It is an entire city block. And you're right, that place is massive. And so you're saying, was this Rasheed Wallace?
18,000 square feet.
So a house the size of that Shop People place is just staggering.
So 1,000 square feet is like a small apartment. Or not a small apartment, like a small house.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so imagine shop people plus a small house. And, just a nice take there.
Stunning. All right, thank you, my friend.
You're welcome.
There they go. Yes, shop people on the corner of Oak and Grand. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, city officials in Tacoma are fed up with gang activity in public places, especially their bus stops. So, transit workers are installing speakers this week to pump classical music from Seattle's King FM, which plays classical music, into the Tacoma Mall Transit Center. This tactic is designed to disperse young criminals who make drug deals at the bus stop or use public transportation to circulate between the mall and other trouble-prone areas.
Don't they try this in every city? Don't we get the story about every 6 months from, like, it'll be some quickie mart owner in, Baltimore who's decided to play Chopin because he thinks it'll scare away the hoodlums?
Well, it's in L.A. and some of the gang-infected areas. They're changing the name of the streets to embarrass the kids not to be there, like Powder Puff Lane.
Rose Drop Avenue.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to somebody about that. Our friend Trey, who we used to work with over at Fisher.
You talked to Trey?
He actually emailed. I got to email him back. Trey, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I it's not that I've blown you off. I just haven't emailed you back. Because Eddie Izzard is coming to Seattle.
Uh-huh.
Trey, somebody's like,
is he a friend of Trey's?
Yes. Is that like being a friend of Bill? I'm a friend of Trey's. Anywho, but he was like, hey, we all in a caravan to Seattle to see Eddie Izzard. But you go to see him, and he lives in the suburbs, and I swear, like, we would go to poker nights at his house where you're trying to be manly and so forth. Mm-hmm. And you drive, and I swear to God, it's like Sundew Lane, Gundrop Avenue, Wintergreen Court, Rose Rock, Happy Bunny Avenue. I mean, it's insane. It's funny that you mentioned that because that was a story arc in the comic strip The Boondocks by Aaron McGruder, where this kid Riley, who lived there, who had originally grown up in the inner city, and he was obsessed with being a gangbanger, and he found out that he lived on Timid Deer Lane or something, and it was just like this unimaginable embarrassment. So that's a great idea. That'll certainly work better than. Did you say it's in L.A. that they're doing that?
The street names, yeah. But in Tacoma, they're doing this classical music.
We're the Rolling Powder Puff Crips.
So what do the gang members of Tacoma say about this classical music being piped in? They say, this is a whack. And they're going to hang out at the mall, or babies are us. The music isn't going to change the attitude of these kids.
Let me understand this. They're embarrassed by the classical music, and so they're going to hang out at Babies R Us instead?
Yeah.
I don't know. Insert joke here. Rick. Here's an easy formula to figure out the relative square footage of a home. The square footage of a home or duplex
is a living space.
Is inversely proportional to the how many homeless people poop in your driveway.
Oh.
Ha, ha, Z. Thank you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. That was only once. That only happened one time. And I didn't,
that you know of.
And that's true. And I didn't see it happening. It was just my, listen to this. Rick, send me your address and I'll send you a property profile of where you live. Yeah, I'll do that right away. All right, here's Tim Riley.
A Kirkland, Washington man was stabbed in the back by a teenager trying to steal his iPod. The 48-year-old man suffered a life-stabbing stab wound. He made it two blocks to his house where his sister was able to call for help. He was taken to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. Two 17-year-old boys were arrested and charged with robbery and attempted murder. Well, there was a time when wearing sunglasses would seem too cool for school. But for pupils at a primary school in Australia, they are now compulsory, part of the uniform. The move is aimed at protecting young eyes from the sun's dangerous ultraviolet rays.
Is that a play on words?
Yes, it is.
All right. Rick, about that dead girl, she wasn't found in her sister's apartment. The sister found her dead in the apartment where the party happened, lying next to two people who were sleeping. Oh, that's creepy.
Oh, that my God.
I don't want to hear anymore.
Okay. And we're done. All right. Blah, 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 blah. All right. Let's do one more and then we'll take a break.
Well, Apple iTunes has a lot of customers. The company says sales at their online music store have exceeded 3 billion songs. They have now overtaken Amazon.com and Target to reach third place standings in music retail in the U.S. The company also makes the iPod media player the top seller of its kind.
All right, we'll take a break here. We'll come back. We have more coming up today, including the top 5 slow dance songs of the 90s. We'll talk to Dennis Pitzenbarger. Ed McCarthy will join us in our hunt for the second worst story ever. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's the Rick Emerson radio program, 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, we'll talk to Scotty J. We'll talk to Dennis Spitzenberger. We'll have Ed McCarthy and the top five slow dance songs of the 90s. This, however, is Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
So here's a dog that caused some problems. A dog is in a local pound because it caused an accident. Jim Nice and William Pulling were riding their bicycles when they approached the home on Harmony Road. This is in Polk County. A boxer mix came running from the home directly toward the bicyclist. Mr. Nice was unable to avoid hitting the dog and crashed his bicycle. He was thrown over the handlebars, hits his head on the pavement. He was unconscious, and he had to be lifelined to OHSU. He was in critical condition. And about a month ago, that same dog chased the female on the bicycle. So since then, the owner has complied with the licensing requirements and has purchased a fencing system to keep the dog on the property, but he hasn't installed it yet. This after it's caused two accidents and put somebody in serious condition. Yeah. So now the dog has been taken away to a local pound.
Mm.
So maybe he'll do something about it this time. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown has made it clear to President Bush he will not delay an Iraq troop withdrawal just to show unity with the U.S. The Independent of London reports that Brown is expected to make a common statement in October about the future of 5,500 British troops in the Basra region. Brown's willingness to form an independent British policy in Iran is seen as an important break with Tony Blair. The Bush administration has been nervous about this, but Brown's spokesman told reporters that they made it very clear to the U.S. that there will be no change to the British government policy on Iraq. Military chiefs in London have said Britain is likely to hand over control of the southern Iraqi city of Basra by the end of the year.
Well, that's nice of them. Well, because we wanted more responsibility. I'm so unclear about who's even there and who's not.
Well, those are the good Iraqis that behave themselves. We get the bad Iraqis.
Do what they're told.
Yes. The British have a habit of making people behave.
They really are
good
at
that. We just make people nasty.
That really is true, actually, when you think about it. Hey, let me... Never mind. It's going to take
us off. Sit down and have a cup of tea.
or we'll beat you. I mean, that really is... The British and the Germans have this weird... they do have this weird ability to forcefully instill order in people, whereas we try to do that, and you're right, it just makes everything worse.
Yeah.
Like, oh...
And then we backfire, and then we try to cover up. Things are going well, but not that well. Please give us 20 more years. Remember Pearl Harbor.
Peace with honor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they got old slogans we used 50 years ago.
I like Ike. Oh, Jesus. No, you're right. So the British are clearly, I mean, they clearly see that the jig is just up. So they're going to be leaving. So that's wonderful. Yeah, that's great.
Then corruption and economic mismanagement are hampering the $44 billion effort to rebuild Iraq into what we don't know. An independent government auditor is set to tell Congress that little has changed in Iraq. Reconstruction is costing more and less is getting accomplished. Iran is the biggest threat to the Middle East, says Condoleezza Rice in her latest publicity statement. We have no idea where she made that statement from. The Democrats are complaining about the arms deal to the Saudis. The Bush administration wants to send billions of dollars in advanced weapons to Saudi Arabia so they can kill our troops in Iraq, which is where they're sending most of these people. Yes, their own weapons against us. What could be more convenient? This is a bad idea to give arms to Saudi Arabia, at least says one person who apparently reads something about it. He's New York's Anthony Weiner, who's some congressman of some sort, I guess. Well, wait a minute. This is the wrong one. Here we go.
Saudis are a country that sent us 15 of the 19 bombers on September 11th. They're the country that sends 45% of the foreign fighters that are fighting in Iraq. They're a country that has sent 50% of the foreigners that are in U.S. detention for being enemy combatants are Saudis.
But other than that...
What is he... But that's nitpicking, isn't it?
It is.
Is he like a first-termer or something? He sounds way too commonsensical.
It sounds like he's actually done some homework.
Oh, what a clear thinking going on. That will not be allowed to stand.
He says Saudi Arabia is not our friend, and they don't like Israel either, but we know that.
The war on terrorism, to a large extent, the war for hearts and minds, they are the enemy. They're spreading the word all over the Muslim world that jihad means killing the Christians and the Jews.
He kind of sounds Barney Frankish.
I was just going to say he sounds like that, or he sounds like one of those guys with a big sort of flapping mouth who would be an enforcer on The Sopranos.
I remember what happened a few years ago in the Middle East.
History should serve as a guide. We must not forget that the high-tech arms we gave to Iran ended up in the hands of the Ayatollah Khomeini, and that could again happen with Saudi Arabia, could happen with Egypt.
Liberal.
fellow traveler. The Ayatollah Khomeini, I haven't thought about that guy, or the Khomeini, as they used to call it. I haven't thought about that guy forever. What did he die of? He died of natural causes.
Or old age or something. He was old.
He was like a billion years old, wasn't he?
Well, all those people look old over there with the beards and the black hats. And
boy,
the...
I can't tell. When I was a kid, I used to watch the news, and he was just terrifying, the Ayatollah Khomeini. I mean, he was clearly crazy and evil. And he always had that big black turban on and just those piercing eyes. And he was, wasn't he the one that coined the phrase the Great Satan?
I believe so, yeah.
That's some marketing right there. That's a phrase that still gets heavy traction these days. He should have trademarked that. That's like, let's get ready to rumble or something.
So Tony Snow says no such arrangements have been reached with Saudi Arabia as of yet.
There have been conversations with other regional partners. They have been informal for the most part, as Nick Burns noted yesterday. They've been taking place over the last 9 to 12 months. However, there will be an attempt to formalize not only conversations but agreements by the middle of the month.
I mean, has there been a secretary in recent history who has to lie so much on any given day about so many things?
That's why I wonder if he has some sort of flow chart in his office to keep track of the
liorhythms,
the mistruths that he has to peddle out there to the press, who clearly, I mean, it cannot be counted on to do anything remotely resembling it, like investigative reporting at this point.
And let's rewrite each other's articles.
And the best part is, here's Tom Tomorrow, who does that comic, This Modern World, really nailed it when he said that the press really does have this predictable rhythm that they do, this cycle they go through, where the White House will say something that's completely untrue, the press will swallow it whole, the press will then pass along the White House lies in the newspaper. Later on, after the White House lies have cost us billions of dollars and cost all kinds of troops their lives, then the press will come to the conclusion that maybe, just maybe, the White House was dishonest and hornswoggled them. Then the White House will write some, or then the press will write some big expose about how they themselves, the press, were swindled by the White House, and they will promise to be better in reporting that story. But of course, by that time, that story's already done, and they're busy swallowing lies about some news story. Read Saudi Arabia and or Iran.
It's easier to chase Paris Hilton, she's closer.
Really? They ought to just... I mean, that's the thing. Do you realize this? Here's a frightening thought. Do you realize that if TMZ was covering the White House beat, we would probably get a more honest read on the daily events?
I think so.
I mean, if we had... If TMZ and Paris Hilton were in there every day in the White, having to grill... Can you imagine how fast Tony Snow would just fold like a cardboard box under the weight of TMZ? Because he doesn't have the Washington Post in there just ready to swallow his garbage and regurgitate it all over the front page the next day. So, Jesus. All right.
Let's see what other half-truths we have here to pass along to you. We just read them, you decide. The security situation in Iraq is better. That's what President Bush's pick to head the Joint Chiefs of Staff told lawmakers. At a Senate confirmation hearing, Navy Admiral Michael Mullen said the president's troop surge is having an impact.
I believe the surge is giving our operational commanders the forces they needed to execute more effective tactics and improve security. That is happening. Security is better. Not great, but better.
Not great. That's what we're willing to settle for.
But better.
Whatever happened to Surge the beverage?
I don't know.
Does Surge Cola still exist?
I haven't looked for it.
I don't care. Don't call about it. Don't. Here's Tim Riley.
Okay, so let's... Tony Snow, we're not done with you yet. In more and more instances, Iraqi citizens are turning against Al-Qaeda. More and more citizens are turning against Al-Qaeda. The choice of anti-terrorism. So says a White House spokesman Tony Snow in his daily so-called briefing.
If you take a look at what's been going on the ground, in many ways what has been going on among the Iraqi people has been outpacing progress within the political realm.
What does that mean?
I have no idea what that even means.
That could be used for like any comment. Let's play it again.
If you take a look at what's been going on the ground, in many ways, what has been going on among the Iraqi people has been outpacing progress within the political realm.
What's been going on among the Iraqi people is dying. That's it. What's going on among the Iraqi people? Well, they're flinging themselves into various parts of the street in little pieces. Well, okay. Well done, then. That's it.
Tony Snow said, quote, we need to get things settled, whatever that means. I guess the British are getting things settled. They're packing up and going back to their island. That's how we settle things.
Marines, we are leaving.
Tony Snow, let's see, who else do you have to defend today? Say something creative about Alberto Gonzalez.
The Iraqis themselves are turning aggressively against Al-Qaeda. and a number of areas throughout Iraq now. It's not merely Anbar anymore, but it seems to be spreading. And what you see are people themselves creating conditions for getting to where we want to be.
Well, that's not a butthole burp, but that'll do. What about it makes about as much sense.
Tony Snow, I can't say that I'm going to miss him, but he really is just amusing.
He can look you straight in the eye and tell the biggest lies and nothing to do with anything.
There's absolutely no traction of any kind within any of his comments.
He's perfect for right-wing radio.
Yeah, but, well, you know, that's why he's so good. Yeah, because he was sort of a low-grade Sean Hannity at one point. I think Snow used to fill in for Limbaugh, didn't he?
No, he might have.
I think Tony Snow used to fill in for Rush on days when Rush was on vacation, when Rush was off getting cochlear implants. I think they would have.
I never hear
Snow
anything
there
about Rush anymore.
Well, there's a joke there somewhere. Hear anything? Rush? I don't know what I would say. There's, you know, he just sort of became a water carrier for the Republicans. That's kind of when that guy quit being entertaining.
Well, let's go to Texas, shall we? A man is in custody after leading police on a high-speed chase because he said his cat was dying. Investigators say Ron Teague was arrested after a 45-minute chase that started near Garland and ended in McKinley, Texas. Now, Teague said he refused to stop because he had a cat with him that was dying.
I was trying to get to bed, and I was hoping they just quit following
him. Thanks for clearing that up, unintelligible guy.
That's the guy with the dying cat. One more time.
I was trying to get to bed, and I was hoping they just quit following him.
The cat owner said he was afraid the cat wouldn't make it if he did pull over.
I thought about it, but I said by the time I do go through all that, the cat will die.
He told others in the neighborhood that he was a cat worshiper.
He told some of the other neighbors that he was an atheist, but he worshipped cats, and they were his only god.
Okay. We'll file that away to play later, out of context. Let's see. Oh, God. People are already posting to Lisa Goddard's wedding blog. Who wants to hear a post to Lisa's wedding blog?
I do.
So Jason Sporbert was on, maybe that name has made that guy defensive, was on earlier today. Let's see. Here's a post from Lisa's wedding blog. This one's directed at Jason, apparently. Jason, in regards to your Rick Emerson show debut, I think you comported yourself quite well, especially if it was your first radio call ever. Please do not allow Rick to rattle you. He can be challenging to his callers and guests. It's a sort of hyperkinetic hazing ritual that never really ends. So please don't take it on the chin. Remember that you, sir, he says to Jason, begin creepy mode. Remember that you, Jason, are envied deeply by hundreds, perhaps thousands of men the world over. End creepy mode. He says, I am sure that I speak for many. Jason, please call again. Yeah, Jason, call the show every day. Call constantly. All right, here's Tim Riley.
This is also from Texas. This is from Bazoria, Texas. Wearing your pants below your waist may soon be outlawed in one of the oldest cities in Texas. The man of Brazoria says he feels compelled to dress an ordinance, and making saggy, baggy jeans against the law. A similar ordinance was recently passed in the town in Louisiana, providing fines and even jail time for violators. The mayor there says it's all about decency. Supporters of the ban say they're tired of seeing people walking around with their underwear hanging out, and a whole lot more in some cases. On the other hand, those who oppose the idea say the government has no business telling them how to dress.
Yeah. Did you see this thing about botulism, about these cans full of botulism that are just exploding?
How can I get one?
Can't just look for the big exploding can. Cans of recalled food are bursting. Here's a phrase you never want to hear about your body or about something you might be eating.
All right.
Cans of recalled food are bursting. The cans are swollen with bacteria. the bacteria that causes botulism. The bursting cans were among those being held by Castleberry's Food Company, which announced a recall of 90 potentially contaminated products, including chili sauce and dog food. Blah, 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 blah. Four people have been sickened and or hospitalized. Apparently, the bacteria thrive in moist, oxygen-free environments, such as inside cans of food. As the bacteria grows and reproduces, it produces gases that can cause contaminated cans to swell and burst, sometimes on store. Imagine you're just pushing your cart through like a Safeway or a Ralph's or something, and a can explodes and just showers you with botulism. Jesus. And then right next to this, completely apropos of nothing, right next to this is a banner ad for an insurance company, and it's about a save up to 70% on life insurance. And the banner ad is just a picture of a small girl looking down at the ground, and the caption is, "Dad, what would happen to me and Mommy if you died?" in huge letters. Jesus God. All right, well, there you go. Dad, what would happen if you were showered with botulism tomorrow? Here's Tim Riley.
So I guess the Paris Hilton story that was published in the media, well, first of all, it came out of a British tabloid. British tabloid originated that story about Paris Hilton losing her inheritance, which was supposed to be $60 million. Well, now they're saying that the story was made up and she's only worth $30
million. So so the business of her being disinherited is not true?
It was a made-up story by one of the British tabloids.
Well, that's disappointing.
I know. It is.
Well,
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah. All right.
Actress Lindsay Lohan's parents are weighing in about their daughter's most recent DUI arrest. Dinah Lohan tells the New York Daily News that Lindsay is, quote, getting the help she needs. When asked if Lindsay's woes will hurt her acting career, Dinah said no. Her estranged father, Michael, took a more negative view, saying that the movie industry isn't helping his daughter's recovery, and called the rehab facility Lindsay was in, quote, a country club.
Who said this?
Her dad.
You know, her dad irritates me. Her dad is trying to step in and be some, like, pseudo-tough guy at this point, but he hadn't even seen her in, like, 10 years or something, right?
He's kind of like the Fred Goldman of Lindsay Lohan's life.
That's fantastic. Yes. Yes, he is. All right.
A Los Angeles woman has sued Lindsay Lohan in small claims, claiming the troubled actress and her boyfriend hit her car. Sydney Dupay claims that in April of this year, she and her main man, Jazz, cut her off in their SUV while she was driving on Fairfax Avenue in L.A. And Lindsay stopped and glared at her, and Jazz was hostile and tried to intimidate her. She says they gave her a fake name and number and drove away. So that's that.
Email comes to us, says, Rick, here's the question of the day for you and Tim. Is the actress who played Mindy from Mork and Mindy still alive? Thanks for answering this.
Pam Dubar.
Dauber. I think.
Isn't she on a soap opera or something?
No, I don't think she's on anything. Unemployment, maybe. I haven't seen Pam Dauber. The last thing I remember Pam Dauber in, and this is funny, actually, because this guy was in the news the other day. Pam Dauber was on that show My Sister Sam with Rebecca Schaefer, who, of course, was killed by that guy who himself was apparently repeatedly stabbed in the bathroom of his prison the other day. So I don't think Pam Dauber's doing a whole lot of anything these days. I think Pam Dauber... Hey, Scotty, you could probably get Pam Dauber... Pam Dauber's not even a C-list celebrity at this point. Pam Dauber, she's like an F-list celebrity. You could probably book her, since you're clearly failing spectacularly on the... she's not from Portland. Is Pam Dauber from Portland? Does anybody know?
She's from Detroit.
No, yeah... Scotty says she's from Portland, or was that Lindsay Wagner? I don't think Lindsay Wagner is. I don't think Lindsay Wagner is from here either. No.
She was in a TV show in 1999, known as "Du Emkopf mit Nürnberg" in Germany.
Wonderful. Straight to German DVD. That's fantastic. Oh, by the way, you will be interested to know, Tim, that since we discovered that Japanese animation cartoon series for which you voiced a purple bear,
yes,
there is somebody in the audience who is going to start watching all 53 episodes.
But that's good, because I didn't think they were available, because I only found 3 online for sale.
Well, apparently you can import them from Japan, and there's some people in the audience that...
probably wouldn't be on the Japanese one, because that would be on in Japanese.
Oh,
my job was to speak in English. I did not translate them into Japanese.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yes.
Oh, I hope they didn't buy those from Japan.
Oh, no, that would be terrible. That is not me. I do not speak Japanese.
Somebody dropped like $300 on an import of a Japanese cartoon, hoping to get Tim Riley.
Thank you for the thought.
Thanks for that. Oh, wait. Here we have a Pam Dauber answer. Dauber, hi. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Pam Dauber's married to Mark Harmon, who's on NCIS.
That can't be true.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, long time. They've been married a long time.
That's one of those things where it's almost kind of, well, first of all, that just seems weird that she's married to Mark Harmon. That's
That means they're related to the Nelson family. Oh, yeah, they tried to take Ricky Nelson's wife's youngest son away from her when she had a drug problem.
I'm so confused. How are they related? Who's related to the Nelson family?
Well, Mark Harmon was Kelly Harmon. Is Kelly Harmon's brother, and yeah. Kelly was married to Rick Nelson.
Okay, so you think
of Chris Nelson.
So Mark Harmon was the brother-in-law of Ricky Nelson's brother.
No, he would be brother-in-law of Ricky Nelson.
Yeah.
Okay, he was the brother-in-law of Ricky Nelson.
Yeah,
okay.
His sister married Ricky Nelson.
Yeah. Which means that Mark Harmon and Pam Dauber are then, through marriage, both related to those kids who were in the Nelson band in the 80s.
Correct.
Right.
All right, fantastic. All right, so Mark Harmon, you know, that Mark Harmon, Pam Dauber thing, I mean, you know, God bless true love and all, but it's just a strange combination of people, especially because everybody of my generation remembers Mark Harmon as just being, you know, he was voted sexiest man alive for like 20 years in a row, and that business of him appearing on SNL wearing a towel, and I guess you just picture him being with some like 19-year-old blonde chick. So, I mean, I guess that's cool. I mean, I wonder, Pam Dauber was never really that good looking, though. Even on Mork and Mindy, her whole thing was that she was kind of goofy looking.
But she was good enough to be the hostess of an infomercial called IQ, a program to increase reading, speed, and comprehension.
Really? I wonder if the other guy on there was... I wonder if David Trudeau was on there as well.
And they've been married a long time, too.
Interesting. All right.
About 15 years.
Do you know, has she gotten better looking somehow?
I don't think so. I think she's probably about the same. I really haven't seen her, but I just know that they're married.
All right.
She's 56 years old.
All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Rick.
Well, no, I mean, I admire that. In a weird sort of way. I mean, not in a weird way. I'm just saying I admire Hollywood marriages that stick together.
20 years.
Like that. Well, it's like Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think Rita Wilson's like way older than he is to begin with.
She is the aunt to the Nelsons.
Hey, Pam Dauber?
Yeah.
It's all very confusing.
To Tracy Nelson, Matthew Nelson, Sam Nelson, and Gunnar Nelson.
Gunnar. Hi, Sue. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hi. Hi. I'm just a long-time caller here.
Thank you.
Long-time listener.
Yes.
I just wanted to say Lindsay Wagner is from Portland. She went to David Douglas High School.
She went to what? To where?
To David Douglas High School out here in Southeast.
I think that's the first I've heard of that.
Yeah, she did.
And so, all right, well, there you go. So what?
Okay.
All right,
thanks.
Thank you. So
bye.
There you go. So there's Lindsay Wagner, who apparently is from Portland. Lindsay Wagner of Bionic Woman fame, which they're going to be remaking, of course, into some hideous, unnecessary television program. All right.
They always do things like that.
They really do.
Like that. An Underdog movie. Why was that in great?
Oh, goddamn. All right. So has everybody here seen the trailer for that Alvin and the Chipmunks movie?
No, I have not.
You have not? Sarah, no. You've seen it.
I have.
How bad is it?
It's so bad that it can't even be described. I mean, do you have it flagged somewhere? Do you have a bookmark?
Oh, yeah, I can find it in like 2 seconds.
We can just play the Alvin part. There's no need to play the entire thing. But let me just say this. And Court and Fatboy were kind of riffing on this on Friday. Here's all you need to know about the Alvin and the Chipmunks trailer, Tim. Because I don't know if Alvin and the Chipmunks, if they hold any sort of nostalgic value for you, if it's a thing that you are at all compelled to see.
It doesn't do much for me.
I
thought it was fake when I was a kid.
Oh, it's the Alvin and the Chipmunks.
They're speeding up the tape. I even knew that when I was like 4 years old.
Now, of course, before Dave Ross did, was it Dave Ross? Is that his name?
I think it is. Yeah,
before Dave Ross did Alvin and the Chipmunks, what other song did he use?
No,
that,
Dave Seville.
Dave Seville. Yeah. What other song did he use that same tape, pitch trick on?
I don't remember. I should know that, shouldn't I?
It was the song that was the precursor to Alvin and the Chipmunks. It was The Witch Doctor.
Oh, okay.
It's that Ting Tang Walla Walla Bing Bang song. Mm-hmm. That was also Dave Seville. So the trailer for this new Alvin and the Chipmunks film, and again, as I said, I don't begrudge anybody doing voice work because that's easy money. But this is not voice work. This is actually Jason Lee in a live-action Chipmunks film in which, first of all...
Are they using live chipmunks?
No, they're not. They're using bad CGI chipmunks who have...
people in chipmunk suits.
They do little hip-hop chipmunks.
Yeah, they're all these sort of like ghetto chipmunks. It's all,
the part
it's
that broke
sad.
My heart is when Jason Lee makes his appearance.
and he does the Alvin line. But let me just say this. That the entire trailer, and we won't play all of it because there's no point. The entire trailer, I swear to God, and this is a children's film. This is a mass market, wide release, general admission children's film. And this trailer, if you've seen it, is based around, I believe, Alvin eating a piece of chipmunk poo that has recently come out of his brother. I swear to God. That's a trailer for a children. It's not like I'm offended or anything, but I mean, come on now. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. That it's a trailer for a children's film in which one character is engaging in the eating of a piece of filth from another character. Do you have just the little money segment there?
Oh, you want me to find that one?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, just
get off. It's 3 a.m. Alvin. Alvin. Alvin.
Oh, okay, that's all.
The Chipmunks.
That's all we need to hear.
Theodore, no, here's the part.
Relax, Dave. It's just a raisin.
Prove it.
So then he eats the raisin.
Okay.
Oh.
And then Dave leaves. And then he spits it up.
You owe me big time. Oh.
Because, of course, it wasn't a raisin.
Oh, gross.
It was
poo.
Waste from his brother.
That's when the grow on.
The more you know. All right. We should take a break. We come back. Oh, Megan, my neighbor is on the phone. Fantastic. So
you mean you're basically roommate?
She's not a roommate.
Duplex mate.
Shh.
Do mate.
Shut up. We'll come back. We'll talk to my neighbor. We've got a Pam Dauber comment. We have Ed McCarthy. He'll speak to us about O.J. Simpson. More from Jim Riley. We have the top five 90s slow dance songs. Dennis Pitzenbarger. It's all in the way you said it. Here's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson radio program live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Rick, about that Alvin and the Chipmunks trailer. You know, that trailer is the segue from our current times into the world of Ow My Balls from Idiocracy. You know, here's the great thing about Idiocracy. I found that movie to be kind of disappointing. I didn't really like Idiocracy as much as everybody else did. It had its moments. The great thing about Idiocracy, though, is whatever its failings as an actual comedic film, because I didn't find the movie all that enjoyable or funny. The great thing about Idiocracy, though, is just the concept. It's just the idea. And the fact that the movie itself exists, what's great about it is it just serves as something we can all use to reference things. Everybody, all right-thinking people, really ought to see Idiocracy just so you can reference it and use it as sort of a shorthand when describing something.
Alvin!
Alvin! Please stop. It's 503-733-2970. We'll get to the calls in just one second. Let me read this email that says, about Sarah's live read.
Oh, God.
Rick, I had to tune out for a second because of a phone call, so I missed much of Sarah's live read. So if you can just let me know if Mall 205 is the same or if it's a whole new Mall 205, that would be great.
Dress Barn's still there.
P.S. You sounded great, he said. Oh, all right. Let's see. All right. Oh, is this? Okay, this is my neighbor. Okay, so there was a whole debate raging. God, was it last hour?
Oh, by the way, I had the sealer to the deal of the debate, but continue as if I haven't already won.
Okay, I don't even know how this came up. Oh, Rasheed Wallace is selling his 18,000 square foot home. And then we started talking about how many square feet my home is. And the fact that Tim is way more mature and adult than all of us on the program. Like really more so than Sarah and myself combined and tripled. And so Tim was able, just from the number of bedrooms and bathrooms I had, Tim was able to guess by the square footage of my home within like 10 feet. And then Tim said, well, don't you live in a duplex? And I don't live in a duplex, which is something that it seems to come up with alarming frequency on this program, like every 6 months. Because Joni's
so you're
all
saying
on
that at
my...
one point you don't think that the place that you live was
I
one
don't,
full house?
No. In fact, it was entirely the opposite of that. It was, in fact, you sons of bitches, it was two separate freestanding houses.
On the same little piece of property?
It's not a little piece of... It's 900 square feet, apparently.
Actually, 1,800.
Over which they then constructed a common roof. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show my lovely neighbor, Megan. Hi, Megan.
Hi.
I'm sorry.
Megan.
Thank you for holding. All right. Will you please answer this question? And, don't feel like you have to give one
and
answer.
And there's no stigma attached to it.
Psh, to what?
proudly living in a duplex.
Don't live in a duplex. Please don't feel like you have to give one answer or the other because of how anybody on this program has come down on the issue. Would you say that we live in duplexes? Would you say that, because you live next door to my wife and I, would you say that you live in a duplex?
No, I live in a house that was constructed at least 2 years before your house.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, pish posh, my young friend.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking
about. I have a back porch. It's not really functional anymore, because of that common roof that they built later.
Oh, sorry about that.
But, you know.
And furthermore,
so why
did
they build a common roof if they're two separate houses?
Because they're owned by the same guy. Because they're owned by the same guy, and he wanted to consolidate. And plus, it is two houses next door to each other. Now, what he did is, in that space between the two houses, he built a sort of, like a roof, and then a wall that goes over the front, and that is now a storage area between the two houses. So it's sort of like a house, and then like a storage hallway, and then the other house.
Yeah, we have no shared walls at all.
All right, so let me ask you this.
And let me just say this as a final observation.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
If we lived in a duplex, don't most duplexes have the same blueprint? Isn't it two houses on the same floor plan that are then joined by a common wall? We have different floor plans. Again, she has a back porch. I do not. The houses are not mirror images. She has a front porch. I don't. The houses, I have a garage, and I don't think you have a garage, do you?
No. Well, no, but I think my basement's larger than yours.
Okay.
Why would you need two garages for one house?
There's not one house.
All right, so let me ask you this, Rick.
Yes?
So I'm looking, I typed in your address, and I'm looking at this very, you know, professional website, portlandmaps.com. And I just wanted to know, if I'm looking at your house address, so you have two full bathrooms?
I do not have two full bathrooms.
That's so funny, because this this map that I'm looking at, with the big blob where your house is, says that you have two bathrooms. And that you live in an 1,800-square-foot house.
Okay, I don't live in an 800-square-foot
house. And wait, here's the description of type of home. I believe it says duplex.
It does not say duplex.
It says duplex.
Where are you looking? What is the website you're on?
PortlandMaps.com.
All right, hold on a second. Portland Maps. Okay,
I'm going to put it in a different one, too. My friend sent me
all
another
right.
one called Zillow.
Fine. All right, fine. Hold on. Hope you don't have anything you have to be doing right now.
Sorry,
Megan.
Megan.
All right.
No, I'm driving home.
All right, I'm putting in my address. All right. Enter.
And we live on two separate streets.
That's
well.
The other thing.
Our,
that's
our
totally.
Addresses are on two separate streets.
That's the other way you know that we're not duplexes or a duplex is because she technically lives on a different street than I do. All right, I put in my address. Okay, well, that's just wrong, though. It says...
Oh, it's just wrong.
Right at the top, it says description duplex, but that's just not accurate. That's entirely inaccurate.
It says you have two full bathrooms. If you were a separate residence, it wouldn't be saying you had two bathrooms.
Oh, who knows who even runs this site, though? This site's just run by maniacs.
And there aren't two dates
probably
that the houses
Geo-City
were built.
Thing.
So you're built with 1927.
All right, but that's just from my house. That's from my address.
So you're saying that you live on that small piece of property that isn't... That could not fit two 1,800-square-foot houses.
All right. Okay, Megan?
Yeah.
Here's what I'm going to do, because I don't want to take up all your time. I'll fight the good fight for both of us here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, because we don't give it on the air, obviously, I'm going to put you on hold. If you are okay with this, if you can tell Scotty what your street address is, he'll put it on the screen, and I'll type it in, because I want to see what it says about your place.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Megan. Hold on a
you're
second.
Welcome.
All right. There you go. There's my neighbor, Megan.
No, your roommate.
Shut up. All right. So Scotty is...
Rick, why on earth would it say it's a duplex, give the full coordinates of both of your houses together, and say that it consists of two full baths?
Oh, but please, because who knows?
Why are they only paying property taxes for one house?
Well, let me understand this. So your sole argument rests upon the accuracy of government figures. Come on, please. All right, hold on. I'm typing in my neighbor's address. All right, let's see. What is the... thank you, Scotty. All right, hold on. All right. Ba-ba. Okay, that's her address right there. See how she lives on a different street than I do?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there are all two right. sides to my house, too.
Northeast or southeast? Yes, southeast. What? You're being so sarcastic. Okay, I'm waiting for it to open here. Well, okay, this is...
That's weird. It's not even appearing. It's like it doesn't even exist.
Shut up! What is... Okay, wait, hold on. Let's see.
I didn't find it.
Well, it's not appearing. Well, that's just weird.
Because it already has an address.
Okay, well, she claims that her house was actually built in a different year than mine. Okay, let's see if she's still there. Megan, are you still on the line?
Yeah.
All right.
She probably doesn't want to live in a duplex either.
Where did you get the information that said your house was built? What year do you think your house was built in?
I'm not sure what year, but our landlord told me that my house was actually built like 2 years before your house.
So that mine was built in 27. So this would have been 25, theoretically, that your house, which is separate from mine, was built in.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I don't want to. I know you probably got things to do, so I'm going to let you go. But I'm going to track down our landlord, and I'm going to see if I can get him on, and we'll figure this out once and for all.
I have his cell phone number if you need it.
Oh, really? I'll have you give that to Scotty, and then we'll track him down.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Hold on a second. All right. There you go. All right. So, Scotty, you can talk to Megan.
No, that's just a different mailing address. That isn't actually an address.
It's a different mail. What do you mean it's a different – a mailing address is an address?
How come it doesn't exist? All right, let me type that fake address into the other search engine.
Tim, would you like to weigh in on this as a person with knowledge in realty?
Yes, what would you like to know?
I'm just saying, is there a way to find out what year her house was built?
Yeah, just go to the property tax records.
Okay, and so is that like a city website?
County.
All right.
Well, then we count.
Okay, so I'll do that.
This doesn't exist on the other one either.
Shh. I'm not hearing you.
Don't shoot
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, I got a solution. I know why you're why it's showing up that way on your website, on this website.
Why?
When he built the common roof, he, for tax purposes, combined the two properties.
Ha!
To show that way.
But so, so
therefore making it a duplex.
No, but that's not really a duplex. That's just a duplex on paper then. So it's
a
not,
duplex on paper?
It's
What's
not,
the difference?
So it's not really a duplex. It's a pseudo-duplex. Is that correct, sir?
I would say that would be accurate, yeah.
All right, so
well,
there
still,
you
I
go.
I'm still right, because the word duplex is still in
nah,
that statement.
I don't acknowledge it, then. It sounds like it's some sort of a scam happening.
What, you're proud that you have a gap between your house, two houses where homeless people can poop in?
No, they don't poop in the gap. They poop in the driveway.
Don't poop in the gap.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. Alvin!
Hey, you could probably call it a multiple dwelling unit, an MDU, which is usually reserved for apartment building. But I'm going to go with Sarah on the common roof thing. And I had a question.
Yes.
If I take the wheels off my mobile home, is it still a trailer?
I'm sorry. Why do you drive in a parkway and park in the driveway? All right. Thank you. Bye now. All right. All right, we have all these calls to get through.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting emails from people saying, yeah, because a landlord that owns property in Southeast Portland would never make anything up.
So this is Ed McCarthy. Apparently he's getting with us a little late here. Scotty is insisting that we get somebody from the county tax assessor's office on
well,
the
Well, you
air.
Know, I really think we should call somebody from the city of Portland since they're the ones who run PortlandMaps.com and they're the assessor's office.
Yeah, but they wouldn't know my house. They only know what's on the form in front of them. And I'm not saying my landlord.
So do
I'm
you want to pay more property taxes? Do you want your tax to double? How much do you want to fight this?
Hey, so that's the so Tim, is that the deal? Am I is this lowering my property taxes that the city thinks I live in a duplex?
Not necessarily.
Yeah, see, so it probably doesn't make any difference tax-wise.
It's per square feet.
So there you.
And, how much your land is worth?
Wait, so am I then actually paying more if the city thinks that I live in an 1,800 square foot home?
Are we talking about you as the tenant?
Or the landlord. Well, I guess it doesn't affect me, but
no,
I'm saying...
it doesn't affect you.
So I guess maybe that's why she's not listed. So he's just paying one property tax bill. So he doesn't have to file... I see why he's doing this now. Yeah. So it's easier for him. He pays one bill and not two.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay. It all makes sense now.
Yeah.
I see why he's called it a so-called duplex.
It is a duplex.
All right. It's not a duplex. Or a tumor. Hi. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Hey, Megan sounds hot. Where do you live?
Thank you. Bye now. All right.
She is a really cute girl.
She is hot. If only you were able to stalk her, sir. Unfortunately, that's not a possibility. All right. Well, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the CNN Radio Center in Atlanta, our good friend Ed McCarthy joining us now. Hi, sir. How are you doing?
Well, Rick, 1,000 apologies. Just running a little bit late today. You know how that goes sometimes?
You and me both. We had, we had a show that starts at 11. It started at 11:05. A new news hour. It started at 12:10. A Lisa Goddard segment that was supposed to end at 11:45 that ended at noon, and Steve Kastenbaum's 11:45 segment happened at 12:15.
And I completely screwed up the works, and
I
apologize.
No, I'm saying you are completely – is it that you are following today's precedent, sir. You're completely
well,
on time.
I was the icing added to the cake. Let's put it that way.
You're correct on Rick time today.
Okay.
Real quickly, and I wanted to ask you this because I know a lot of people have moved on a long time ago from the O.J. Simpson case, but I continue to be fascinated because it just sums up, it is a microcosm for so many social problems, issues, ailments, woes, so many social constructs and so many social intersections in this country were contained within the O.J. case. And so every twist and turn I just continue to follow. So the latest is... correct me if I'm wrong here, that O.J. had this book, If I Did It, which was then pulled off the market or never sold. Now, the Goldman family has won the rights to sell it, And what is the deal? They are going to retitle it and sell it themselves?
Yeah, exactly. News Corp owned publisher HarperCollins was on scrapping that book. That was back last November before the release. So Fred Goldman said, I'm going to get this book, and I'm going to retitle it. Now it's going to be Confessions of a Double Murderer. That's what he wants to title it and put it out, get the money for it. Now, of course, the Brown family will get some of the money from this. They'll get probably 10% or less, but he'll get a bulk of it. The bankruptcy judge waited, and they came in at the 11th hour, and finally he said, okay, I'm going to reject your plea to get involved here, and I'm going to give this whole thing to Fred Goldman. So he says after 13 years of trying to collect, he could now get some money if this book goes on the shelves, as he plans to do it.
And so this is 90% of this or whatever is going to go to the to the Goldmans.
Exactly. And of course, you know, this would go at least partially toward that $33.5 million wrongful death judgment that he won against Simpson back in 1997.
And so then here though, is the real question. This is the real rub. And Dennis Miller actually had brought this up today on his show. And I was thinking about it, and I had no idea what the answer was. Does this mean that Fred Goldman, as perverse and as morbid as this sounds, although, again, in the world of the O.J. case, just the morbidity of this is just so off the charts that it can't even be graphed. Is Fred Goldman going to do, like, a publicity tour for this book?
That I don't know, but and you know, that's something you got to think about.
And I'm not being flip about it.
No,
I mean, really,
if
his goal, and again, let me be very clear about this. I'm not suggesting that Fred Goldman is trying to profit off the son of his death per se. I mean, that's between, and what, if he feels good about this, that's between him and whoever. But, I mean, if his goal is not to profit as such, but if his goal is to get money out of O.J. and in turn make O.J. pay for this, make O.J. suffer, then it seems like it would behoove Fred Goldman to go out and just pimp this book as hard as he possibly could if you're operating under the theory that every dollar the book makes is a dollar that O.J., you know, loses.
Certainly makes a lot of sense, and that is something why he fought so hard and fast on this, to try to get this, because he says, you know, it took 13 years, and he's trying to get the money and not getting a dime out of O.J., and they had this phony company set up that the judge said, well, you know, that's not going to work. And so now they look at this whole thing as he does. He looks at it as a way to at least kind of grind the stone a little bit and get some money out of this.
This is the weirdest country we live in. It really is. I mean, there's just this case just continues to be 10 years after he was acquitted. This case continues to be fascinating.
It really does.
All right, my friend, enjoy the rest of your day. And as always, it is a pleasure to talk to you, Ed.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, there you go. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. Jesus, we're running late. All right, let's break now. It's 503-733-2970. We return more realty and housing talk. Later on, top five slow dance songs from the 90s. Dennis Pitsenbacher, Scotty J, more of Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. This article will stun you from the New York Times. Young adults giving newspapers scant notice. Well, I'm horrified. It's 503-733-2970. Still to come, top five slow dance songs from the 90s. Dennis Pitsenbacher and our hunt for the second worst story ever. This, however, at the Ministry of Truth is Tim writing.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A bomb threat has been made against the Army recruiting office in Northeast Portland. We don't know very much about it. Meanwhile, Governor Kulikowski says he is close to vetoing a $4.6 million bailout for OMSI. They were needed some help to pay off a 1991 state loan that financed its relocation to its newest site on the Willamette River. They ran out of money or something. Elsewhere, imagine this. The Iraqi parliament has made the decision to take off the month of August.
It surely eliminates hopes that the 275-member Council of Representatives will pass laws sought by American officials as evidence that they're moving in the right direction.
What laws would they possibly pass, and who would they possibly get to enforce said laws?
That's true. That's ridiculous.
I mean, I guess everybody's going to express outrage at the Iraqi parliament's taking a month off, but really, for the love of Christ, what is it they're supposed to be doing? Who honestly believes that they'll be doing anything if they're at work? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, screw it. I don't care. Might as well take time off.
Well, Navy Admiral Michael Mullen, the nominee to be the next chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, tell the Senate Armed Services Committee leaving Iraq is much more complicated than setting some dates.
It's just physically going to take us some time to move. We have an extraordinary amount of equipment there. We would have to decide what we would leave, what we would bring back, what we would repair.
Yeah, they have big screen TVs for sale there and Popeye's fried chicken.
I was just going to say the many fast food restaurants that have sprung up there. All right.
What's said in Washington and what's going on there are two different stories.
The contrast between what I found on the ground and in theater and what I thought was going on based on being here. And it was, and they spoke to this as well. And I really do think that's an important piece for all of us.
That's exactly the thing that Tony Snow said last hour.
Now, we're getting to this part. These words have never been said before. Whenever the troops leave, the word leave is in the sentence, they will be protected.
I am extremely concerned in any transition scenario, ensuring that we do it in a way that protects our troops, that we don't expose them.
Okay, so now it's being said.
So this
you are being conditioned.
So who is this that we just heard from?
This is Navy Admiral Michael Mullen.
And he's going to be the chairman of the Joint Chiefs?
Yeah.
All right, so this is
telling the Senate Armed Services Committee. So you're being conditioned little by little.
They're
here.
Softening up the ground.
Yep,
as they say. All right.
All right.
A retired Army general is being blamed for most of the official failings surrounding the friendly fire death of Army Ranger Pat Tillman.
I was just going to ask. It's so interesting you bring that. I was just going to ask. Hey, do you have that Pat Tillman story?
I do. Secretary of the Army Pete Guerin said the latest and seventh investigation into Tillman's death reveals that retired Lieutenant General... Oh, he retired conveniently, did he? Retired Lieutenant General Philip Kenzinger deceived investigators and failed to provide proper leadership to his troops.
So, the first thing about this Tillman story you heard was that he was killed by enemy fire.
That was probably the first investigation. How after the seventh?
Afghanistan. Now, the latest version of this Pat Tillman story, and he was the NFL star, right, that he became an Army Ranger. So first he was killed by the enemy. Then it was a horrible mistake by American troops. The latest, and I'm not going to dwell on the unpleasant details of this, but you can read them online if you want. But the latest medical examiner reports, which apparently were covered up by the government, everybody be stunned by that.
After six previous investigations.
Six previous investigations covering up the fact that he had three close together gunshot wounds, I believe, to his head, administered at a range of something like 10 feet, which is not typically the kind of thing that happens in some sort of horrible mishap that was completely by accident. So it's hard to believe that the government might have been struggling to cover that up through six previous investigations.
Mm-hmm.
Also, by the way, unless I'm completely wrong about this, and I don't mean to be venturing into Clyde Lewis territory, but I do believe that Pat Tillman was one of the guys who was on that team that rescued, what's-her-name, Jessica Lynch, another thing that was completely fabricated and peddled to us as truth when in reality it was...
Oh, yeah, that was a manufactured hero story.
Hog swallop, yeah. So
well, another... That was another time when the media failed to investigate anything.
No, they just swallowed it.
They investigated the mom who worked in some factories. What makes your family so heroic? Well, I guess it's in the genes. I'll always remember that.
Totally.
And then they're flying over where she was born in a helicopter, and they're showing all these trees. How could a hero be born here? With all these trees.
I'm surprised they didn't, like, construct a log cabin for her to have been born in. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when Jessica Lynch had amnesia?
Oh, yeah, that was good, too.
I can't remember anything about it. Except I don't even know if they showed her saying it. Mm. It was just somebody. Maybe it was the mom, in fact. Because first, you know, she took down an entire squadron of enemy fighters or something with herself and like a penknife. Mm. Then she was at home recuperating but wasn't in condition to talk. Then she couldn't talk because she had amnesia. And then, like, 3 years later, it came out that it was all fabricated. Pat Tillman was one of the guys who helped to rescue her. He, of course, is then killed by what they claim to be enemy fire. Then they claim it's a horrible accident. Now the evidence just indicates that he was executed by somebody, which they've covered up with six previous investigations. By the way, these are not allegations or wild conspiracy theories. These are facts that the government themselves now admit, only because they know it so long after the fact that Americans are probably have probably forgotten about it.
Well, here's the punishment for this general who lied all along. You know what's going to happen to General Kinzinger?
Promotion?
He's going to lose one of his three stars.
No.
And about $2,000 a month in retirement pay.
Well, that's just not right.
Liberalism.
The creeping scourge, Tim. That's what it is.
Well, let's talk about grave-robbing sex offenders, shall we, in the Corpse Watch.
Here's your Corpse Watch for Tuesday.
I'm digging up phones. I'm digging up phones. Zooming things that's better left alone.
Corpse Watch for Tuesday at the Rick Emerson Show.
This comes to us from Chippewa.com. Your online guard, guide to the Chippewa Valley. Dateline Madison.
I don't even know. Oh, that's in Wisconsin. It must be.
Wisconsin. Three men who dug up a young woman's corpse to have sex with it after seeing her obituary photo cannot be charged with attempted sexual assault because Wisconsin has no law against necrophilia. The judge was correct to dismiss the charges against twin brothers Nicholas and Alexander.
Isn't that like a czarist kind of family there?
Yes.
Are they wearing like cassocks?
And Dustin. All 21.
Nicholas, Alexander, and Dustin.
Dustin.
All right.
The three men went to a cemetery in Cassville on September at some point to remove the body of Laura Tennyson, who was killed the week before in a motorcycle wreck. The men used shovels to dig up her grave. They abandoned their plans and were eventually arrested after a vehicle drove into the cemetery and reported their behavior. The three men had seen an obituary in the Tennessean with their photo and wanted to dig up her body and have sexual intercourse. The issue is a provision in the sexual assault law saying criminal penalties apply when the victim is dead or alive at the time of sexual contact or sexual intercourse. Senator Dave Schultz, a Republican of Richland Center, introduced legislation shortly after that would make sex with a corpse a felony, punishable up to 6 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. This bill would levy the same penalties against anyone who intentionally disturbs a burial site or buried human corpses.
You know, Republicans are always limiting your personal freedom like that. It's
yep.
Not right. So these are the... We saw pictures of these kids, I think, when they were first arrested. Because you're right, it was, what, two twin brothers and, like, a friend of the family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the twin brothers are, like, full-on creepy and, I think, covered in sores.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was... I mean, it's just... It's so hard to take the story seriously because it sounds like it had to have been fabricated, but it was real, that they were, like, thumbing through the obituaries and that apparently unsuccessful in obtaining live girlfriends at the mall or whatever, and they just saw some hot girl, you know, she happened to be dead, sure, no one's perfect, and so they saw her picture in the obituaries and were like, well, she's probably still kind of warm, let's go dig her up. I mean, so there you go. So you got to make your own fun in Chippewa Falls or wherever it is. So there you go. Is that in Titanic, isn't it? Isn't that where Jack Dawson is from?
That's where Jack Dawson is.
Well, I noticed the other top story from Chippewa.com is man trades bicycle for more beer.
There's your corpse. Wow.
I'm digging a phone.
Fantastic.
I'm digging a phone. Zooming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories.
We'll do a few more here, and then we'll roll the top five. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, let's talk to Fred Goldman, shall we? The rights to O.J.'s controversial book, If I Did It, now belong to the relatives of Ron Goldman. He's the man who was found murdered in 1994, along with Nicole Brown Simpson. Ron's father, Fred Goldman, you know all about him, says the ruling has given him some sense of relief, but probably not for long.
After 13 years of trying to get some justice for Ron, today's probably the first time that we had a any sense of seeing some light at the end of the tunnel.
Media whore. Ron Goldman.
I was just going to say, he's, look, and I don't mean to diminish anything and... I mean, tragedy and so forth, but goddamn, can you imagine what a buzzkill that guy is to live with?
Yeah.
I mean, you see other members...
he almost makes you like O.J. better.
you see him interviewed, and he just, I mean, I've seen interviews with other members of the family, and I of course, am not saying, like, just get over it, but
grumpy
you,
old man.
You see interviews with other members of the family.
Move on.
And they, yeah, they have achieved some sort of inner equilibrium, and they realize that you just got to... You just got to put one foot in front of the other, and kind of, you know, life is for the living and so forth. But, man, he is just, he's just a big black rainbow. You know what I mean? He's just one. I mean, he comes on the television. He's sort of like, here's a little nerd reference for you. Fred Goldman is sort of like a living dementor. He comes on the television, and just all happiness and light and goodness and joy and peace is just sucked out of you. I mean, he just is just the most relentlessly off-putting person. And you're right that there is something, I mean, let's just say it, you're right, there's something very untasteful and just very sort of off-putting about the way that he just, every time there's a camera, it's like he can sniff the presence of cameras in the air the way that a cat sniffs catnip, and he just seeks them out. I mean, there's just no getting around that. You know, whatever. But Fred Goldman's loss, our gain, because he may be doing tours for this book. I mean, so, I mean, he and if his past behavior is any indication, he will be finding every microphone and television camera within the continental United States and beyond to pimp this book, which he will be profiting on. So, Scotty, you should be looking into that. Oh, Scotty has typed on the screen that he has, I don't suppose it's a play on words, he has some killer news for us. Scotty, if you can join us in the studio now, please to be sharing whatever your killer news is. So that's good. Do we have more sound from Fred Goldman?
No, that's all he said.
Amazingly enough, he didn't say anything else?
No.
All right. I don't know where Scotty is. Maybe I need to play the sounder again. Wait, hold on. Let me just...
Scotty J. I wish I knew how to quit you.
Please, I kiss you on the mouth. Please let me...
Good morning, Metolius.
Maybe he's just fled the building. He did seem rather on edge today. I don't know to what I should ascribe that. All right. I'm sorry. Here he is. Scotty J joining us now in the studio.
Oh, by the way, Broadway is now closed between Northeast 12th and Northeast 14th due to a bomb threat at the Army Recruiting Office in Northeast. That's 1317 Northeast Broadway. So if you were planning on signing up for the Army this afternoon, you may want to wait till tomorrow.
Or you can just go down there and get used to the bombs.
Yeah.
Here's Scotty J. Hi.
Patty.
Hey.
Yeah, I've been running all around.
Says you have killer news.
Yeah. It was something that you didn't want to jinx earlier, but I think it might be... happening.
Oh, God, what are you talking about?
So do you really want to know, or...
Oh, yes.
Wait, now, before we do anything else, let me just read this letter. Here's a copy of an email that Scotty sent. This is why I was asking Tim this morning if we were still related to MTV or VH1, because I guess they're being real hard-asses about who they booked Scott Baio with, and I guess they want you to be like a VH1 affiliate. So this is the letter. It's amazing...
Why is Scott Baio so much in demand?
Well, because he's doing that VH1 show, but I mean... I didn't really think anybody but Dave Zinn was watching that. It's amazing how intelligent spell check can make someone sound. Listen to this email that Scotty has composed to this woman at MTV, and keep in mind all these words are spelled correctly. Good morning, Heather. Good morning is capitalized, by the way, because it doesn't...
Is that okay, or...
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll let it slide. Thanks for taking my call. I am with CBS Radio in Portland, Oregon. We would like to interview Scott Baio as fans of his work and recent show, fans of his work, of his oeuvre. We would like to interview Scott Baio as fans of his work and recent show. We are not sure how to go about booking this phone-in. I look forward to hearing back from you and potentially setting up a viable working relationship in this successful Oregon market. You could write
That's
for Tony
awesome.
Snow. What does that even mean in this successful Oregon market?
I don't know. I'm pulling out every stop now.
That doesn't even mean anything.
I know. It's just a bunch of mumbo jumbo.
Okay, now you've given yourself in the signature file for this letter you wrote to VH1. You have given yourself a new title.
Yes, I have.
And but you've
what
got
is he?
Director of Bookings.
It's because I'm not messing around anymore.
Don't
we're going to start getting stars on the Rick Emerson show.
That's the spirit.
Okay, but now listen to this now. He's given himself a new title and a fake title, I might add, but he hasn't even done that correctly. He's transposed words. Sincerely, Scotty J., Program Assistant Director. That doesn't even mean anything.
Yeah, it probably should have been. It probably should have been assistant program director.
I don't really know that it
better.
Conveys the enormity of the title when you say it incorrectly like that.
So you're the APD of the station now.
So you've just given yourself the assistant program director title.
Yes.
Okay, you can't.
We work at other places where people do that.
There's only like two. Listen, there's two people here, Rick.
Hold on. Tim is noting that there is precedent for that, though. Would you like to elaborate, Tim?
It seems that we were working in another place, a company that beloved us dearly. Somebody else get away with that?
Calling themselves the APD?
Someone who decided to get their own office even though they didn't do anything.
But you see, I'm backwards. I called myself a pad.
But, Scotty, you actually do
things. A pad? He's not an APD. He's a pad.
A program assistant director. If she pressed you on this, what would you say that means?
I help out a lot. Around the CBS station with getting coffee and making sure that commercial program.
Make sure you lead with that as your primary accomplishment. Well, I'm a coffee writer.
Yeah, I'm a coffee writer. That's good, Tim.
Heather, I both grind and serve.
Jesus. We're not lying.
You know, I just tell you that, hold on just a second. Tim was talking about somebody we used to work with who shall remain nameless, who just gave themselves the title of assistant program. Oh, Sarah's asking
and sent
who.
Emails to everyone.
You know exactly who it is. It's exactly who you think it is.
No, see, it isn't who I think it is.
I don't even know. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, totally. And then started signing the emails, assistant program director, like for no real reason.
Well, it makes sense if I'm the programming assistant. What's the difference if you throw a little director in there? Because I am directing people.
About $50,000.
Yes. Okay, well, that would be nice.
An office.
So, obviously, once you give yourself that title, you get
job security, esteem, respect from your coworkers.
Remember, it also says assistant. Assistant never has the same.
Isn't that the recurring joke on The Office where what's-his-name Dwight is always trying to call himself like assistant to the regional director as opposed to assistant regional director, and he's constantly calling, I'm the assistant regional director, and what's his name? He's assistant to the regional director.
That's the deal. The stigma thing is when you put the assistant in there, you don't have as much clout.
Program assistant director. I don't even know if I can say that that's incorrect because it's just a title that doesn't exist anywhere.
Tomorrow I'll have a new title, by the way.
Okay. There you go. What is the good news?
The good news is I finally got a hold of
Tom Bosley?
No. Peter Criss's management.
Oh, see, you say that. Well, I'd completely written that off.
And she is so excited now because, of course, I'm CBS.
Because you're the pad.
I'm the pad.
I didn't realize I was talking to the pad of the station.
I patted her down. No, I didn't. Anyways.
Listen, Jason Sporbert.
I know. I put a Sporbert joke in there.
Now, can we stop here? Stop for a second. You listen to the Jason Sporbert, Lisa Goddard segment? Okay, do you hear how it sounded when he was trying to be funny?
Yeah, it was terrible.
Okay, listen, do you want to be Jason Sporbert in that sense?
No way, I'm the pad.
Okay, you're not getting the lesson of the story. The moral is, don't try to be funny because then you sound like Jason Sporbert.
Ooh.
Yeah, there you go.
That has a bad stigma. Stigma's the word today.
Have
by
we
way.
Made the point?
It's comedy without the laugh track, Scotty.
And without the comedy, quite
comedy
frequently.
Comedy with crickets.
So, I know it's reflexive. You've got to quit trying to be funny.
Okay.
Because he's no longer going to have the last name of Sporbert. So, unless you want to become Scotty Sporbert, I would suggest that you just stop that. So, anyway, as the pad, and we're getting sidetracked here, but so I had gotten an email out of the blue. It's all the good guests we get, we don't even perceive. They just come to us for some reason, accidentally, is how that typically happens. I just got an unsolicited email from the management of Peter Criss. Peter Criss, of course, a former drummer for Kiss. He was the cat man, and so he sang That's the Kind of Sugar Papa Likes, among other hit singles. Everybody knows him as the guy who sang Beth when he was in Kiss. So I get this email like, would you like to talk to Peter Criss about his upcoming solo record? Which is, you know, both great and not. Yeah. And so I passed it along to Scotty. I'm like, abso-freaking-lutely. And so you, but you know what it is? That had been so long ago, and we had just never heard anything, and I had completely forgotten about that. So when you say, when you came in here, I actually had no idea.
Right.
I would never have guessed Peter Criss. I figured you were coming with Scott Baio news.
Oh, I'd like to have that, but we're going to see. I'm having
to go
through
a
million
guy from
hoops.
Kiss. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And she said, now, you got to make sure, you
now,
know, maybe one or two Kiss questions, because we are promoting the new CD. Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
Sure. Yeah, I'll be all about that new CD. So this is...
The other thing is I kind of made false promises, too. I stepped out of bounds in my pad position.
What false promises did you make to Peter Criss in booking?
I can also put you in touch with other CBS stations here in town that may want to talk with you.
Well, that's true. You're on a speaking basis with everyone else down here.
I suppose that's true. Of course, you're not really going to do that.
Well, I could, because I could, you know, maybe introduce him to KUFO.
That's absolutely what you should do. What you should try to do is dilute down the impact of every guest we have in the program by making sure that in the same week they appear on every other radio station in the city. That'll really hammer home the exclusivity angle, Scotty.
Well, as long as they're on our show first, it doesn't matter.
All right.
So anyways, yeah.
Okay. Right now, if you had to rank it 1 to 10, where do you put the strength of us getting Peter Criss
on the show? I'm going to say 8.5.
You remember how you were like a 9.9 on Alice Cooper?
That's because I was thirsty, and I never did get that bottle, by the way. So, in other words...
I don't even know what you're talking about.
You promised me a liquor bottle.
I promised you a bottle of liquor when you booked him on the program and when he appeared.
And I never got that.
I was thirsty and I never got to drink.
Exactly.
I don't know. All right. So when will we know if Peter Criss is coming on the program?
Well, she's going to get right on it now that she knows she's in a hot, successful market.
I swear to God, I'm just going to slug you one of these days.
Why is he still in here?
Okay, I'll leave.
What do we know about Peter Criss? Do we know when?
We know that she is going to talk to him because he takes one or two, you know, interviews a day.
Uh-huh.
And then his time for interviews is actually when our show is on, so it's perfect.
Okay.
And so she's going to be back with me within a day or so. However, she sent this to me seconds after I got off the phone with her. It was just like that. I got to send you all this press stuff.
All right.
I got to do this.
Okay, so we'll keep us in the loop about this.
Okay.
So we may or may not be speaking to Peter Criss, rock legend Peter Criss.
That's right.
All right, here you go. I'll give you back that information.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
I'll give that to you later.
Is he going
to
stay in for the top five?
Well, we have the break now. We'll come back. We'll do the top five in the next hour. Coming up in the next hour, the break. More of... Sorry, no, coming up, break.
I'm crazy.
I'm sorry. Maybe I should let the pad come do the rest of this. Well, break. Coming up in the next hour, more of Tim Riley, Dennis Spitzenberger, and the top five 90s slow dance songs. You stay there. Show. It's 503-733-2970.
How you doing, little piggy?
Now I got a big mouthful of peanut butter cookies, what I have. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, I should give a shout-out to my man, Colin. Colin is that guy on Friday who called in and was like, hey, I have a bunch of Mad magazines in my garage, and he heard, you know, my lament about how long time ago I had my Mad magazine collection basically stolen from me. Blah, 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 blah. And he just called up and he's like, hey, I got a bunch of these Mad magazines. And I offered to pay him and he was like, hey, he's like, I don't read them and, you know, whatever. I'd love for you to have them. So he dropped off, I don't know, probably 45 or 50 of them. They're still in great condition and they're all from...
Oh, that's so exciting
for
you. Yeah,
and they're all from, like, they're 30 years old. They're all, like, from the 70s, which is great. They're all from the right around the time I was born. So those are up in my office right now. So now I got to, it's just enough, because he asked me, I'm sorry, kind of a mush mouth thing going on right now, because he, and it's not I am not being compensated for this.
I've eaten his cookies before.
Simply noting, yes, that his day job is, when he's not out fetching Mad magazines from his garage for me, he runs, D-Lights Cookies. He is a baker who has this cookie company, and they're fantastic, they really are. And again, I'm just saying that because it's true.
It's the, oh my God, it's the cranberry and the white chocolate chip.
And he just dropped a couple off because he's a nice guy, and you know, they are fantastic, but it's like you can, and I'm mean this in the best way. You can just, you can, as you take a bite of it, you can just feel the cookie taking control of you. Because,
well, you've always had kind of a weakness for sweet stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, just as we were coming back, I'm like, well, I'll have a bite of this cookie and I'll finish the rest of it later. But then we heard, I heard the bumper music start and I knew we were back and I was sort of angry. I'm like, I want to finish the cookie. So it's on the back
shelf.
You
sound like a problem, right?
I'm just saying. No, I'm saying I got a whole cookie. I got a whole cookie weakness. So it's sitting on the back shelf, but it's taunting me. It's calling to me. Anyway, so he dropped off all these Mad magazines, and so now I got to go invest in a bunch of like, you know, like Mylar nerd bags to put them in and so forth. And now that, I mean, because I got that, I got a couple at home, and I got those 40 or 50 he dropped off, and that's just enough. I mean, if he'd given me like 10 or 15 Mad magazines, anything, you know, whatever, 40 or 50 copies in good condition of vintage Mad magazines, that's actually just enough that it might actually trigger my, just, you know, my drive to collect them all again to have my collection intact. So who knows? I don't know. So that may be what consumes all my time and money at this point. What are we doing here? Ah, we're doing the top five.
Five,
all right. And then
four,
more from Tim Riley,
three,
the bottom of the hour, Dennis Pitzenbarger later, and
five,
a hunt for the second worst story
fire.
Ever. This, however, the top five. Scotty J., will you please join us in the studio? Thank you.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
I think this is the second time that I've ordered Scotty to the studio and he hasn't arrived immediately.
I think he's mocking your authority, Rick Emerson.
Well, he is the program assistant...
Director.
Sorry, the program assistant director. I don't even know what that means. Logically,
it doesn't mean anything.
I don't even know how to analyze that title. Well, I guess I'll just wait. Where does he go? Is he going out to smoke in the back?
No, because his little room would smell like smoke.
That's true. I guess he can't be. I guess he can't be smoking. Well, that's just. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show while we're waiting for Scotty J. Hello.
Hey, Rick. I just thought of a good name or title for Scotty.
Yes.
How about talent coordinator or personality wrangler?
Personality wrangler. If only that actually happened. If only the wrangling of personalities
you can
actually.
Aspire to greater things, and it's good to start off with a title.
Okay, well, maybe we can give him the title to which he can then aspire.
There you go.
All right, thank you, sir. All right, there you go. Hi, it's Scotty J.
It's Scotty.
Hey, how's it going?
You know, Sarah was noting earlier that you seem to be in a particularly fragile emotional place today.
Maybe, but now that I'm the PAD, I kind of need an assistant really bad. I'm just so busy.
Are you having a bad day?
Not anymore. I got that off my chest earlier.
What was the bad day? I don't think you... Not with me. What was the bad day about?
The bad day was just about just being frazzled in the morning. Yeah, I don't know. We were just kind of... It was probably personal. It was a personal thing.
Something you'd like to share with everyone?
No, it's just one of those moody things. I don't know, but it's gone now. I feel great.
You've shoved the anxiety back down into your soul.
A little black ball.
Ball of pure hate.
Once I got on this...
a ball of viscous anger.
I focused on the Peter thing and...
Really? Did you? Really? Fantastic.
Did you hear that?
I did.
That was me whacking it against my desk.
Fantastic. Thank you, Peter Carlin. All right. That's a double joke. That's a double pun. I hadn't even thought about that. All right. Wonderful. All right, Scotty, you prepared to count these down?
I am, actually.
Ladies and
By the
gentlemen.
Way, my parents were driving through Portland yesterday, and that's the only segment that they heard, us repeatedly playing that.
Did you hear that?
I did.
That was me whacking it against my desk.
You know what that is? That's going to be Peter's version of the Big Sook moment where he's talking about a small, taut Swedish
boy.
Well,
we need to make a sounder for him anyway, so maybe Scotty should make a Peter Carlin sounder using that.
Did you hear that?
I did.
That was me whacking it against my desk.
Fantastic.
You can throw the suggestion on there with that guy screaming, right? Just to hear what it sounds like.
What are you talking about? Oh, this is that thing where you want us to put
okay,
the Howard
Dean
screaming.
Do it so you'll stop talking
okay,
about
let's try it.
Okay, listen. This is what Scotty wants us to do.
Did you hear that?
I did.
That was me whacking it against my desk.
Oh, man. Listen to your smoker's wheeze. Listen to that.
Hey, I have...
Can we please start the top five?
I have allergies. My whole life, so.
My whole life.
Inside
I've
my...
I've been suffering.
My
gets in through this missing tooth.
Now, wipe some chicken grease on your dress. Jesus. Inside your barren lungs where the oxygen can find no purchase.
Sparin Lunga, not lungs. Just one lung.
I'm going to get a soundbite of Jason Sporbert, and I'm going to play it every time you try to be funny. Beat that right out of you. All right, here's the top five slow dance songs from the 90s as compiled by Sarah Dillon.
All right, the number six honorable mention song goes to Vanessa Williams.
Oh.
Save the best for last.
I haven't heard this song forever. You really only know her as a pop songstress. You don't really know her as the hot lesbian porn...
What?
No, oh. No, no. You got the wrong gal there.
I don't.
She... They put
hot
her...
lesbian porn?
She was
not
Miss America.
Yeah.
Right?
You're older than I am. You tell me you don't remember this?
She was Miss America, and what happened is some nasty pictures got out
pictures
there.
Pictures of what?
Actually, was it in Playboy?
No.
It was Playboy?
No.
Or
it wasn't
Penthouse?
Playboy?
There were pictures of her getting on with another woman.
No.
Okay. Dude, I've...
Scotty?
I mean, I'm not saying it was like hardcore, like full-on sex, but I'm saying there were...
Was
Vanessa
there...
Williams was Miss America. And like, in the age before the internet, like now this would never happen because these would come out like way before she ever was crowned. But before the internet, these things took a longer time to come out. She was crowned Miss America. Bob Guccione, who's the publisher of Penthouse, waited. This is the great thing about him, like Larry Flint, to maximize the publicity. He waited for her to be crowned Miss America, and then he said, oh, and look at these photos she took. And it was, yeah, it was her posed in a very sexual manner with another woman.
Was she all nuded up?
Well, nuded up, and yeah, I mean, it was like her.
Was there an activity?
It wasn't like full-on hardcore sex, because it was not like... pornography as such, but it was her posed in very sexual positions with another woman. And if I recall correctly, I think it was with a white woman, and 25 years ago or whenever that was, that probably contributed to the fact that everybody was all weirded out by it. But I mean, I was really young. I was maybe like 9 or 10, but I remember there was just all this scandal. The Miss America, wasn't she the first black Miss America?
Well, I'm not going to quote, but I think yes.
I think she was. But I'm just saying, you know, even 20 years ago, you know, I think that was still kind of a weird, you know, it was a weird deal to a lot of Americans. A lot of people were sort of, you know, it was considered very groundbreaking. And so they were just looking for anything on her. And, of course, he rolled out these photographs of like, hey, here she is, like, getting it on with some girl in the pages of Penthouse. And they, like, yanked the crown from her. And she was considered, and she's pretty, it's pretty admirable, too, because she was considered to be really washed up at that point. They were like, that's it. She's done. She's over. And it is pretty impressive how she rebuilt her career, because if you think of Vanessa Williams now, you think of she's done some acting roles and she's done, you know, all this music for Disney films, no less, like Colors of the Wind. People don't even remember that she was so humiliated and disgraced by these photos she did for Penthouse. And rightly so. She's really done a great job of reinventing herself.
I'm wondering if she was disgraced for like a week and then thought, you know what?
No, I mean, to her credit, she just kind of picked herself up and went on. Good for her.
She is so pretty. I mean,
she's
I still
beautiful.
Think she's one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen.
Oh, she's beautiful. She's very beautiful.
Isn't she on Ugly Betty now? That's
yeah.
The deal.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, her or Selma Hayek?
Selma Hayek's on Ugly Betty.
Vanessa Williams was the mean boss.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't watched it.
Yeah.
I've only watched that clip on YouTube of Selma Hayek undressing in the elevator. Hello. These are the top five slow dance songs of the 90s.
Number five goes to All for One, I Swear.
Not going to play
Come
the John Michael Montgomery version?
I'm sorry, but I hate this
All
song.
For One?
It's a great pop song. It really is.
This particular one has never been my favorite, even when it was on the air.
This was the song of my mom's third wedding.
I was going to say, this is like wedding song galore.
That is why.
Yeah.
I'm always being requested to play this song at weddings. Always.
I know what's weighing on your mind. You can be sure I know my part. 'Cause I stand beside you.
Aren't they doing some show on... No, I'm just listening to the song. Are they doing some show on VH1 where they're assembling like an all-star boy band from a bunch of these second-tier groups? It's like a guy from All for One and a guy from Color Me Bad and a guy from Old Town. And it's like a bunch of second-tier boy bands and then they're creating some super band. And it's centered around a guy from Color Me Bad, I think. This is a great
idea.
Pop song. You can't knock this as a song. As a composition, this is a beautiful song. It really is.
I'll be there.
I mean, sort of heard it too much or something.
I mean, they're, you know, sort of a really bad version of Boys to Men. And I know every word of this, too. That little finger snap in the background, which is totally copped from Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday by Boyz II Men, which came out at the same year. Because you didn't hear a lot of that, and then this song, the production of this, is so clearly modeled that Boyz II Men album. All right, counting down the top five 90s slow dance songs.
Number four goes to Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You.
1990, I checked.
Number four? Did you switch the order?
I did, yes, because I was thinking about it.
Okay.
I think I'm correct.
I love this song. This song kind of overshadows all of her other, all of her other musical achievements. She's had some really beautiful music, but I mean, this is kind of the song that, she'll always be remembered for in this video. Well, you want to talk about an iconic video, too. Just a video that, I mean, to this day, I haven't seen this video all the way through in probably 15 years. Man, you can just picture it like that in your head. And that moment at the end where she has the single tear and everything, just beautiful. She is really gorgeous, too. You don't really think about that because, you're so distracted about that she's bald.
Right.
But
she's still bald to this day, or was that just a fad?
I don't think so. I mean, she only did it as a reaction to her record company telling her that to be more girly.
Right.
So I think she's regrown her hair, but she's gorgeous.
Yeah, because this is right after it, isn't it? And her head's shaved, and she's wearing a black turtleneck.
Yeah.
It really didn't hurt her career at all. It kind of...
Well, she stood out. I mean, it was based on an indelible image. Just an amazing voice, too. What a depressing song.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting bummed out just listening to it. Now, you have to tell us, Sarah, since you assembled this list. Now, are any of the songs on this list, were any of these songs your song with someone?
Oh, yes.
Because that's why this song is bumming me out, because I'm thinking of my girlfriend. There was a girl, and she and I, this was like our song. And, and then, of course, it ended horribly because that's what happens.
Because
life sucks.
Yes, actually, the top three all have somebody associated with them. Not particularly for the lyrics, but because,
And then she has that little thing, that little trill at the end where her voice breaks. Right there. This is so much better than Prince's version. It really is. I mean, this is like one of those Johnny Cash covering Hurt things where Prince just kind of lost this song the minute she did it. I will say this on this album, I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got. It's a strong album. It really is. A lot of great music on here. There is a song on this album called The Last Day of Our Acquaintance, which is about her divorce. We should play that on Depressing Friday. Sarah and I have been talking about bringing back Depressing Song Friday.
But only when Scott Daly's in the studio so we can make him cry.
She has a song on this album called The Last Day of Our Acquaintance about her divorce, which is maybe the saddest breakup song I have ever heard in my life. I mean, you just want to cut out your own intestines.
And is that from this same album?
It's from this album, yeah. It's off the charts depressing.
I wouldn't have thought she was married back then. She looked pretty young when she...
Well, I think she was divorced.
All right, we're getting depressed. Let's
Jesus. All right, top five slow dance songs from the 90s.
Number three song goes to Whitney Houston.
Oh, God.
I will always love you.
You've probably had to play this a million times at weddings.
All of these.
All of them.
Now, I wonder if she wrote this for Bobby.
Well, it's a Dolly Parton song.
Oh, okay.
You ever heard the Dolly Parton version?
No.
The Dolly Parton version is so beautiful.
It's beautiful.
I was just educated.
You listen to that Dolly Parton version, and you have to kind of strip away this version, to listen to it pure. The Dolly Parton version is beautiful.
Now, what was the movie they used this in? She was actually in the movie.
I'm
just trying to remember the name.
What country are you from?
I'm trying to remember the name.
The Bodyguard?
Well, that's right. There you go. You were so close, Sarah.
I've never seen The Bodyguard.
It's a crappy good movie.
He dies at the end, right?
I'm not to tell you.
Of course, I'm never going to watch it.
Well, you know what? I want somebody else to have a good bodyguard experience, so I will not tell you.
Okay. Okay.
It's really...
some parts are kind of scary, actually, when she's being stalked.
Because he's her bodyguard and she's a singer or whatever?
But, yeah, she has like this this crazy fan who's stalking her and trying to kill her and her family. And so Kevin Costner has to take her and move her to a remote location, and he ends up finding them out there. It's a pretty compelling movie.
Keep in mind, by the way, that I don't really know. I'm just guessing. My guess, my read on the film is that he probably either dies or is wounded saving her, and then she visits them in the hospital and kisses him or whatever.
I'll say it's one of the two.
Okay. Apparently, Vanessa Williams is on Ugly Betty. And Sinead O'Connor is still bald.
Really?
I'm just getting all these emails from people here. All right. We have to wait. We have to wait for the stupid moment where she, you know, where it kicks in.
Is this what they used to torture people?
Yeah.
In some country?
Turn it up really
listening to
loud.
A car alarm.
I think I have an affinity for this movie because I was never allowed to watch it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the big controversy? God, this country is so effed up. Do you remember the controversy in the ads for this movie where they would just, like, I mean, this country is so retarded. Like, people don't know Whitney Houston's black. When they were marketing this movie, there was this scandal because a lot of the newspaper ads in the southern regions of this country, the ads had the two characters, like, just in silhouette. Because they was like a them embracing or whatever, but they would just put them in silhouette in movie ads in the South because they didn't want people to know that it was like a white man and a black woman. Because of course no one in America knows Whitney Houston's a black woman. That's of course unknown to everybody. Jesus. Okay, we have to stop this. It's gonna kill me. Counting down the top five slow dance songs of the 90s.
Moving on to number two, Boys to Men.
Okay, so
I'll make love to you.
And you secured all the windows. Great job, guys. Miss Sparks, you're perfectly safe now.
Is this the
actually,
video?
I feel very safe.
Yeah.
Why don't I show you how this works? Push this button, and...
Oh, my God, I totally remember this video. Do you?
No. I think this is after I quit watching MTV.
I am a huge fan of these guys.
Really?
These guys are great.
Great voices.
Can I offer you something?
And, I mean, in a way, you can tell that harmony blend is natural. That's not a studio creation.
But I have some other jobs to attend to. Maybe another time?
Yes, Mr. Smooth Loverman.
Oh, my God.
Please come see me another time.
I mean, for the system that is.
This was totally... They play this, like, once an hour at school dances.
Thank you.
Yeah. This whole album, Boyz II Men 2.
This is a little too racy for my generation, Sarah. We wouldn't have a song called I'll Make Love to You.
It was kind of weird being a sixth grader and dancing around to a song called I'll Make Love to You.
Yes, you think?
Back
I mean, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care, but that is kind of weird.
Promiscuousness.
Serious. You know, that leads to baby-making, Sarah. It is strange.
Right. We always had Donna Summer, and she was pretty racy as far as some of the things she said in the songs.
Yeah, but not in sixth grade. You were dancing to Donna Summer
like
in sixth
seventh
grade.
Seventh and eighth grade.
Were you at Studio 54?
Yeah.
You and Steve Rubell? Songs that just get right to the point. It's not a whole lot of I want to hold your hand.
It is kind of naughty because they're all standing in a row talking about all humping some chick.
Seriously.
And
I mean,
all together like, oh,
but
this
with
is
style.
What I want to do to you. This is what I want to do to you.
But with class.
So are they talking about the same girl, all of them? That's what I want to know.
We will tag team you.
Because that's what it sounds like. And I'm next.
Good times. Just what every sixth grade girl needs.
You've ever said.
Now you'll think that every time you hear this song.
We will tag you.
I will take cuts in front of you.
I'll do it. All right.
No.
I think Tim's computer is up. All right. Counting down the... Counting at the top five slow dance songs of the 90s.
Number one goes to our favorite artist, female, Celine Dion.
Totally. Yeah.
My Heart Will Go On.
On Smooth, 97 AM. God, I don't even know where the poster is in this song. Casey.
I dragged my high school boyfriend to see this movie, I think, four times in the theater.
Really?
Post.
You can't just say post like 5 or 8 seconds before it happens.
There's a build-up. God, I did not remove the soundtrack from my
stereo
for like 6 months.
It's a great soundtrack, but it was just depressing. I remember like I was at work at the time, and I would just sit there, and I would have it in my CD player, and I would be listening. And then occasionally I would have to turn it off because it was just a big buzzkill. That's James Horner, man. He did the music for Aliens. I'm pretty sure he did the music for both Terminator films, the first two Terminator films. He and Cameron had a long working relationship. Great song. I'm not a big Celine Dion fan, but this composition, I mean, in terms of the way that it's written, the melody, I mean, it's just beautiful. Let me just say this, because Sarah and I can talk about Titanic forever.
I know.
And then go shopping for shoes.
The ship sinks.
I will.
In case you haven't seen it.
You know, that mic can be turned off. I'm going to say this about Titanic, because there had been such a buildup about that movie. And was it going to be a disaster? Was it going to be chaos? Because it was the most expensive movie in history. And Cameron was so convinced that it might bomb that he actually reduced his salary to $1 because the studio was, you know, so angry at him that it had gone over budget. So after all this buildup, and I don't think people really remember how convinced everyone was that this movie would fail. I mean, they had written it off. People had written it off as a bomb. People were they were already moving on to the next thing because they were convinced Titanic would be a disaster. And no one knew. And I went to see it opening weekend because I'm a huge James Cameron fan. And like, do you want to know the moment when I knew it was going to be a great movie? I swear to you, when that opening credit sequence, when they just show the slow motion sepia tone film of the people waving on the deck, and you just hear the vocal version of this, the theme where it's that Enya-sounding woman just doing that. As soon as I heard that opening aria, that theme, I was like, I was sold. I was like, that's it. Because he had such an ear and an eye for putting a film together. As soon as I saw that opening credit sequence with this song, I knew the movie was going
to
be great.
Oh, I remember seeing the trailer for it in high school. I went to see Romeo and Juliet. And watching the trailer, it was like, you know, the 2-3 minute trailer. I almost wanted to cry just sitting there watching it. Because I've always been slightly obsessed with the Titanic. And, yeah, and seeing that, I still remember sitting in the theater getting chills and counting down to the day when that came out. And I went opening night and, like, every weekend after that for the past month.
Saw it, I think, 3 weekends in a row. I saw it 3 weekends in a row. And then, I remember getting really, and I had a couple that I knew who went to see it, and they didn't like it. I remember, like, just being apoplectic at people who didn't like Titanic. Just completely mystified that anybody wouldn't like it. Great song, though. Great song.
I've been a big Titanic fan as well for years. I even went on my birthday one year to see Raise the Titanic, and that was long before...
Raise the Titanic.
Yeah, did you ever see
the
that?
Based on the Clive Cussler novel of the same name?
I don't know if they put balloons down there or
That's
something.
That's a terrible
tried to
movie.
Raise it, and it was all rusty when it came up.
All right. We have to break. We come back. Tim Riley, have you prepared news for us?
Oh, yes, as usual.
Fantastic. We'll come back with Tim Riley, and Dennis Pitzenbarger will join us as well. It's 503-733-2970. Tomorrow, top 5 slow dance songs of the 70s. Stay there. Back after this. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen of the Ministry of Truth, it's your personal savior, Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
There could be a few streets that's still closed off around the Army Recruiting Office in the 1300 block of Northeast Broadway. That after somebody called it a bomb threat. So getting back to this Tillman story, the Secretary of the Army, Pete Green, went before some lawmakers today, and he blamed all the lies about Tillman's death on retired Lieutenant General Philip Kensington.
General Kensinger compromised his duty to the Acting Secretary of the Army by providing a report including information he knew to be false, which was his own sworn testimony, undermining the principle of civilian control of the Army.
He is a failed commanding officer.
Had Lieutenant General Kensinger done his job, fulfilled his multiple duties as a senior leader in the administrative chain of command, we would not be here today. 3 years later, attempting to correct the record and restore the credibility of the Army on this critical matter.
And so this is we're on the seventh investigation.
Seventh investigation.
Now? You'd think they would. I mean, look, I'm no genius, but you'd think that the
how
first
many layers
time,
of lies could there be after seven investigations?
I don't, and you, I mean, and I don't mean to say like it's something I can do to a joke or something, but I mean, really, is when they say it's seven different investigations, is each investigation investigating the previous investigators?
Yes.
I mean, is that what that is? Mm-hmm. So really, there's no reason to believe that these Russian nesting dolls are ever going to stop.
No.
All right. Okay.
So this general risks losing a star.
Well, and you know, the real unfortunate thing about this, apart from the obvious, is that none of this would ever come to light if he wasn't a celebrity, if it hadn't been Pat Tillman. And I'm not complaining that he's getting this preferential sort of investigation. I'm just saying it makes you wonder how many times this happens to just ordinary enlisted guys that we don't find out about because their family doesn't have any swing to get it investigated. I mean, even with a guy who was a pretty big celebrity in the world of athletics, it's taken seven investigations to figure out that he probably wasn't killed by the enemy or by any kind of accident. Jesus.
From Florida comes word about the motorist who laughed after being tased.
I'm sorry, where did that come from,
Florida?
Tim?
Florida.
Yeah.
The driver who crashed going a wrong way down an Orange County road has been taken into custody after he attacked and began wildly spitting at everyone trying to help him. Apparently, a pair rushed to help the driver, but was attacked by the crash victim. During the attack, an off-duty deputy who noticed the scene came and shocked the man with a taser gun. But it didn't work. The victim laughed heartily as he was being tased. He laughed on the ground. We know he definitely wasn't right.
Fantastic.
Even after being shocked, the man began spitting at Good Samaritans, paramedics, and other officers. Emergency crews put on surgical masks, and the man was transported to a hospital.
That's wonderful, especially because, you know, you feel you spit once or twice and you're out of spit. The fact that he continued to spit wildly at all passersby indicates an astonishing saliva reserve. I'm impressed.
It's a new phenomenon in New Zealand. It's taking the idea of what you eat to the extreme. Vegan sexuals are people who do not eat meat or animal products and choose not to be sexually intimate with non-vegan partners whose bodies, they say, are made up of dead animals.
That's an interesting, sexy thought.
Thanks for that one, Tim.
Thanks for
You're
that.
You're welcome. And that's it for today. Of course, I'll be back three or four times before the end of the day.
You wouldn't abandon the people like this.
Don't leave your dead animal friends.
Oh, yes. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley, greatest newsman in all the world. Back at 4, 5, 6, and 7, top of the hour all the way through Lycus. Let's see. Just one final boys to men observation here.
Yeah.
Rick, when I was in the sixth grade, our Christian school went on a field trip to a local roller skating rink. Thank you. After playing some Ace of Base for fast skating, DJ for our Christian school skate party played I'll Make Love to You. One of our older teachers went and forced them to stop playing it. Here comes the money quote, though. When one of my friends asked her why they stopped playing it, she said, seriously to us, quote, that song is about ethnic people wanting to make love to white people, end quote. We took the issue to the principal who reprimanded the teacher, but he then backed up her stopping the song by saying, the song in the context of a Christian middle school field trip was inappropriate, which I assume meant he also thought it was a little creepy that the kids knew the words to the song and were in fact lip-syncing while slow skating with one another on the floor. It is kind of weird, actually. Attention, Susan Reynolds. These are the songs that your youth sing while skating. Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Dennis Pitzenbacher. Hello.
Well, at least they might actually reverse skate. That's when it got serious.
The reverse skate and the, what was the snowball skate?
I could never reverse, not backwards skate. You mean like you go the opposite direction?
Well, yeah. Well, then of course, we all, to be smartasses, went the other way, backwards. That was the...
I can't skate at all.
Can't skate at all?
Well, I can roller skate badly.
I see a bit.
I just...
Rick Emerson,
the whole show on roller skating. I mean, I can roller skate, sort of,
don't
but I
fall. Don't we have some roller derby listeners? Maybe they can teach you how to skate.
Rick Emerson with the... That would be sweet.
You know what? I cannot do at all.
Oh, you know that's a brilliant idea.
You have to be... What's the name of the point score person? Oh, it's right on the tip of my tongue. There's a specific leader, the one that actually is the point... anyway.
You know what? I can't do at all is ice skate. That's a thing I cannot do. I've gone ice skating a couple times, and both times I think with my wife, and it's just
my ankles just boom right down, right down. That
I have to tie the skates.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just saying it's just weird. It's a fundamentally illogical act. The idea that you can stand up on this like in a quarter inch blade.
Well, you have to cinch the thing so high, so tight that you can't move your ankle. That's the whole idea.
It just sucks. I mean, roller skating's bad enough, man. Ice skating is like a broken ankle waiting to happen.
I would love to see you roll ice skate. Actually, I don't know whether it'd be better to watch you ice skate or roller skate.
We can have a fun day at Lloyd Center where we go ice skating and then we can go to that store with the Scarface lamps.
Oh, have you been to that store?
No. Which
you
one?
You live in the hood along with myself.
Thanks.
That store at Lloyd Center, it's called Home Decor. I think it's called.
I don't know if they've cleaned up Lloyd Center, but I stopped going there about
the
time.
Well, no, that would remove the charm.
Well, did people stop getting shot out in front of it?
Probably not.
Oh, well.
But it's a great store. It's got a hand-lettered sign, and everything inside is on card tables. And I was mentioning this the other day. The big item when my wife and I went there, because Lara spotted it before I did. She's like, look at that store. And we went in, and we spent about 40 minutes in there. The big item, they were Dale Earnhardt touch lamps.
Oh, now you're talking. Now you got my attention. I'm in.
Now you can furnish your entire home. No. It was like a fake gold-plated touch lamp with and the actual lamp part is all glass panels, and it's like glass panels with bad pictures of Dale Earnhardt.
I would buy that. That's what's the best part.
And then a lot of them are like Dale Earnhardt, like his face, like floating in a cloud, like looking down on a race car. It's wonderful. And right next to that, I swear to Christ, a Scarface touch lamp, and then a touch lamp with a unicorn running down a rainbow. A winged unicorn.
Honey, put the baby in the car seat for after work. Yeah. I know where we're going.
No, it's great. And then there was, man, I hope, and I don't know if this is true or not, I really hope that Al Pacino makes some money on that Scarface merchandise. You know what I mean? Because I don't know if he signed away his likeness rights, you know, or if they're
really
able to.
Does he need it, though?
Dude, do you see it? Do you know how much of that Scarface merchandise? I mean, do you see how big that Scarface stuff is?
Come on, Rick, you've been to my house. I bought the 12-foot poster of him shooting the, you know.
I didn't see that. Is that in the garage?
Yeah, right there in the garage.
I don't even remember that. All right, well, that's what I'm just saying. Like, especially in the hip-hop community, the Scarface stuff is just everywhere. So, I mean, I hope he gets a little. I mean, I hope, Brian De Palma gets points on that. Because the movie, and here's the thing, is the Scarface itself is a really terrible movie. It's just an awful film. It doesn't even really hold up as camp, but I'm hoping he at least can make some money on that because it's just massive.
Can I throw a movie curve at you?
Yes.
If there was a remake, do you think it could be done of that movie?
Scarface.
If they tightened up the story a little bit, couldn't they make it better?
Well, now, De Palma's Scarface itself is a remake of a James Cagney film. I believe that Tony Montana's Scarface is sort of a loose remake of a James Cagney Scarface film. Both of them having the same sort of genesis. I do believe that's the case, but I don't know that for sure.
The guy who did Transformers to do it. But,
No, they ought to remake Scarface and make it good. Do that the same time they remake Falling Down. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Good day. I was thinking about what you were talking about with the I'll Make Love to You song.
Yes.
And how we didn't have anything racy like that back in our school days.
We just had She Bop by Cyndi Lauper.
We had Paula Kakas, Boom Boom Boom.
I don't even know that song.
It kind of goes, boom, 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 let's go back to my room so we can do it all night.
And you can make me feel right. I totally know that song. Who's the artist?
Paul Lekakis. L-E-K-A-K-I-S.
Yeah, boom, 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 let's go back to my room.
586.
I totally remember that.
And that's, I mean, just comes right out and says it. There you have it.
Yeah, let's go back to my room so we can do it all night and you can make me feel right. I've forgotten all about that song.
That's a fine song.
It's funny, I had She Bop by Cyndi Lauper going through my head this morning. And the weird thing about She Bop is not only is it about masturbation, quite clearly, but She Bop is doubly sort of perverse in that there's that line where she says, that line, blah, 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 in the pages of a Blue Boy magazine. And Blue Boy, I believe, is an S&M gay sex magazine. So the song comes right out and says that Cyndi Lauper is pleasuring herself while viewing S&M gay porn. So there's that. And then there's that the best part in She Bop by Cyndi Lauper is when she says, I hope he will understand, and it's unclear where she's talking about her boyfriend or about God. And so that's kind of weird and twisted and hot. So.
And the side note to I Will Always Love You,
yeah,
performed by Whitney Houston, How could Scotty not know that the Dolly Parton song was in the movie itself and they actually were listening to it and making comments about it?
Oh, is that true? See, I've never seen the movie, so I don't know.
They went out on a date.
Interesting.
And she says, this is kind of a cowboy song, and they're dancing to it.
Interesting. When two worlds meet. All right. Thank you.
Bye now.
All right.
We need to break.
Okay. By the way, this email says, I was just at Lloyd Center last night, and I saw this place you talked about yesterday. I saw this place after you talked about it yesterday. It is where the old KB toy store was. Freaky.
Is this that song?
I haven't heard this forever. I think they lead with the hook. Boy, the 80s are terrible. Oh, God.
Do you hear cowbell?
Yeah, it's an electric cowbell, electronic, but it's there. Boy, this is like made up of spare parts from Dead or Alive songs. Oh, for the love of God. A Michael Mann production.
The way you move, get in the groove.
You're driving me crazy, crazy for you. I think he's the gay.
Well, yeah, Stick of Dynamite. Hello. It's time for us to boom boom.
It's time for us to boom boom, make sexy time. After this, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. We now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson show. Hey, I've got that Vanessa Williams thing from Penthouse. Do you want to see it?
Okay.
All right. And we can get HR to come watch it with us here. Okay, this is her shot from, this is the shot of her in Penthouse. I think it's just a small little thumbnail. Oh. So, I think that's her. Over here, kneeling, but I'm unclear.
I have that issue.
That was...
Really? Yeah. That
well...
I saw that tucked away somewhere because it was one of those things...
Oh,
like you had
okay.
To have.
There's...
I don't have it here, not in my CBS office.
You do have... Well, okay. I don't even know... I don't even know...
That's a little naughty.
No, it's not even... Well, it's not even that. Okay, well, let me just say this. Now, do you know why... Now, you know, you can't buy that issue anymore.
Oh, no, the one I have is trash, too.
Vanessa Williams,
yeah.
Do you know what? Would you like to know why you can't buy that issue of Penthouse anymore, Dennis?
I don't really know. I only grabbed it.
Who wants to see Dennis feel awkward?
No, I don't care.
Because that issue also contains an underage Tracy Lords.
Oh, yeah,
when she was
yeah.
like 15.
Yeah,
so that's okay. I'm just saying.
I think that's why I actually.
You might want to not leave that around on a coffee table because that's actually criminal at this point. No, they yanked that issue, so to speak, off the market. Because Tracy Lords, they found out, Tracy Lords, of course, was notorious. They found out she'd been doing porn for like 3 years with a fake ID.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've heard some stories about that.
Yeah, so that
issue. I didn't
realize
that
Vanessa
issue.
Williams issue has Tracy Lords when she was purportedly 18, really 15. So you might want to put that in a safe place.
Well, I'd have to dig through some storage boxes to find it, but I know.
Oh, I'm sure the cops will do that for you.
Oh, well, okay. Thanks. Do you want to go ahead and send them my address? I mean, I got a seatbelt ticket the other day. They're out to get me. I used to love them. Now I just want to watch them low side into a truck.
I don't even know what we're talking about.
Never
anymore.
Mind. Never
All right.
mind.
What's coming up on Miles Around this weekend?
Well, actually, we're going to gear up because I'm actually going to go out and be a race car driver. I'm going to pull a Cole Trickle. I got somebody else that was just either foolish enough or gracious enough to invite me to come out and drive a shifter cart at PIR. And the funny thing about it is, you know the champ car races? You know what I'm talking about? Like the open wheel races?
I do.
You've had the drivers on the show. Those guys go around PIR at about, I think it's like a minute nine, a minute ten is the they're down to 58 and 59 as far as less than a minute to go around the entire racetrack. These little go-karts go around it almost as fast. And these guys, one of the teams from the PKA, the Portland Karting Association, is going to come on the show, talk a little bit about it, and then we're going to go out there and see if I can be Cole Trickle from Days of Thunder and Race. And then we got some other good stuff. We're talking about a little Mini Cooper convertible and all the regular items that come with the show.
Excellent. Miles Around, Saturday 9 to 11, Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, it's Tim Riley, the PA. I'm sorry. The program assistant director is Scotty J. And, of course, the gatekeeper's Dave Zinn. We want to thank CNN Radio correspondent Lisa Goddard, as well as Ed McCarthy and Steve Kastenbaum. See y'all tomorrow, kids. Be safe. Don't let the bastards run today. Watch over Saints. Bye now.
Did you hear that?
I did.
That was me whacking it against my desk.